It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 24th day of June 2021. There is less than a week left in the month of June. Summer is more or less two-thirds gone, and I barely knew it was even here. Yes, this is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn, and I'm Robin. And we've got plenty of sticker bushes into which we can plunge our hands and in a vain attempt to say, you know, retrieve a misthrown Nerf football. That happened once. It was a warm summer's day. The Nerf football went into the hedge right there by a friend's house, and I ran up and reached into the hedge to grab the Nerf football, and I came out and my entire arm was covered with yellow jackets, who apparently have some means of the pheromonic communications or some such, because they all stung at once. And my arm blew up to, like, you know, Popeye's forearm proportions. And, well, you know, it's getting stung season, and if you're allergic, by all means, please try to have one of Joe Manchin's daughter's incredibly expensive EpiPens handy to deal with any potential allergic reaction. Yes. If you'd like to augment your listening experience this evening, when the program is live, of course, which is 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, then bebop on over to headon.live and click on chat room. At which point you will be transported almost magically to the Wacky Zany Multimedia Real-Time Extravaganza that takes place, during those 3 hours, and you'll be immediately greeted by Anatole and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky and, capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator, has still not seen fit to fold space to become man cave. I suspect it's probably like a blast furnace there in the man cave. Mm-hmm. And every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. This program is no different. And so thanks go out to our 24th day of the month subscribers. Thank you very kindly indeed to... thank you to Pam in Washington State. Thank you so very much. And thanks as well to Samson. And thank you to Josh for jumping in. That means that, the fundraising hole is at a truly daunting, downright frightening, $1,158.34. Yow! So that means today is unfunded, Wednesday was unfunded, Tuesday is unfunded, and $858.34 of Monday is unfunded. We're $8.34 with away from being half done with Monday's funding. And Brother Deacon Asa reminded me that while I do mention the depth of the fundraising hole, I'm not doing a very good job of late of mentioning how we remedy that. And that is, of course, over at headon.live under the interface for PayPal. It's right there on the main page. It's easy, easy, easy. And if you'd like to become a regular subscriber, which we would so welcome, then just click the little box that says make this a recurring event or whatever the language is. There's also the United States Postal Service, which we love, which is still struggling to survive despite the best efforts of Louis DeJoy to destroy it. The mailing address for checks and money orders and things like that, you know, solid gold bullion, no, I kid. The mailing address for the Horn mailbox is The Horn, or Head On Communications, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV, 25801, and please make all checks and money orders and et cetera payable not to me, but to Head On Communications. Okay? So that's that portion of the program. That's the housekeeping. And it would be great to finish Monday. It would be great to finish Tuesday. There are sufficient bills waiting and sufficient things due and owing to actually threaten the existence of the, or the continued existence of this little, of this little broadcast, this independent, liberal, progressive broadcast enterprise. So if we can bring that down, it would be fantastic because, well, the fundraising goal is probably the single greatest source of stress in my existence. And making and filling that in would be tremendous. Because if we don't knock it down some, well, golly Moses, we will have the largest fundraising hole in the history of Friday on the Front Porch come tomorrow. This is already one of the all-time biggest fundraising holes. So there, maybe I made it better by pointing out how easy it is simply to help keep this going. Thank you for the reminder, Brother Deacon Asa. What's that? Jeremy says, Robin, stop telling me how fast summer's passing us by. There'll be plenty of fall and winter and the 13 months of spring to fill summer's hole. We can put it that way, I suppose. but I love this time of year, and it seems like it. While there are apparently 365 days of the 28 days of February, it seems like summer lasts about an hour and a half. And today was another pretty one. Steve, on the other hand, in New York, points out you're ciphering to a new level. I know your ciphering ain't all it's cracked up to be. However, the summer will only be one-third over as of July 20th. It won't be two-thirds over until August 20th. Yeah, I understand that, but for all practical purposes, summer is June, July, and August. I know, that doesn't align with the solstices or the equinoctials. It's June, July, and August, though. And by August, the crickets will already be chirping, and well, frankly, they're a little. The crickets are a little harbinger of the coming of cool weather and the dying of everything in autumn and in the northern hemisphere. And you know, crickets are little living sleigh bells. That's what cricket songs are. But it is Thorn in the Side Thursday. And we've got, well, plenty. But before that, Delta Blues. Joey writes, on this day in 1968, and I'm sure that was the timing, I'll explain in a moment. On this day in 1968, following the Poor People's March to Washington on June 19th, organized by Martin Luther King Jr., the protesters built a small city of shanties as temporary shelters were constructed from boxes and whatever else they could find at the mall in Washington. Estimates put the number of homeless living in Washington at about 3,000 to 5,000 during that week. On June the 24th, Resurrection City, as it was called, was closed down by authorities, and protesters had to go back to their own communities because, well, the federal government was not going to tolerate a whole bunch of people complaining about the abuse of the poor and being all, all visible and stuff. And Jeffrey, of course, has something to add.
Yes, and Resurrection City, as it was known in 1968, would be replaced by Insurrection City in the year 2021. True that. However, per the conversation last night with Dave and the Blind, the city officials during the cleanup of the shanties found many rods the homeless campers used to fortify their shacks. In later years, Nixon's campers, Haldeman, Ehrlichman, Mitchell, and Dean, would use the rods to, wait for it, yes, Nixon's merry band of criminals, criminal campers, Haldeman, Ehrlichman, Mitchell, and Dean, used the rods to douse for Watergate.
Yeah, I think maybe somebody should hose Jeffrey down once in a while. Meanwhile, in San Francisco, since COVID-19 hit last year, there's been a major increase in homelessness, hunger, and mental illness. Shanties, shacks, and makeshift homes have been popping up all over the city as people have lost their jobs and homeless shelters are overwhelmed. Exacerbating the issue is gentrification, where foreign money is flooding into San Francisco, and these foreign investors, many of whom are money laundering their assets here in the States, are buying up properties and raising rents to the point where many residents of San Francisco can no longer afford to live in the city. Well, right now, money is very foreign to the horn as we start the night nearly $1,200 in the hole. So please, if you can donate to the show tonight, thank you.
Well, thank you for that, Jeffrey. That's most helpful.
However, don't worry, because the Republicans have a great idea. They're going to cut unemployment benefits immediately in 24 states. Yep, there it was. On Juneteenth, our governor here in this state, make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice, on Juneteenth, cut people's unemployment, $300 a week extra unemployment, because people aren't unemployed because of, make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice thinks it's a matter of laziness, or perhaps, as the word has been used in the past, shiftlessness.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's worth remembering that Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice is fond of telling his Kunta Kinte story, because I guess he thinks Kunta Kinte was a real person. And
God, why'd you make me Jim Justice instead of Kunta Kinte?
And God, of course, in the story, always replies to Jim Justice and says, I made you Jim Justice and not Kunta Kinte,
because I gave you fabulous wealth so that you can do good things with it, Jim Justice.
Well, we've gone over that. We've gone over that before. You know, racists going to racist. Anyway, Jeffrey points out,
yes, the morons in these 24 states are going to cut the benefits, claiming that people are just sitting home and being indolent instead of being diligent and searching for employment. But the facts, as usual, are never indicative of what the Republicans claim. The fact is that during the Great Trump Depression, employment in the states with more generous benefits looked almost identical to states with stingier benefits, and when extra benefits abruptly expired last July, there was no sudden increase in the number of people working. Again, Republicans are mean and just full of shit.
True enough, Jeffrey. True enough, yes. Absolutely. But we have Almost every business, even around here in a beaten down and bedraggled state like West Virginia, has, you know, help wanted signs. But if you go to apply, you'll find that they want you to work for $8 an hour. And maybe if you're lucky, they'll give you 20 hours a week. And trying to cobble together a life out of two or three 20-hour a week jobs and getting each employer to cooperate with the other employers so that your job hours don't overlap is something approaching impossible. It is brutal. And I think the American people are figuring out, the working America is figuring out, that if your job model is based on you running your business on shit wages, that maybe, just maybe, you might not ought to be in business.
Yeah.
And as as Joey points out, what we need more of is stimulus, and we need it now. And we need more, not less. And once more unto the breach goes Jeffrey. Ironically, part of the country that's going to take the worst brunt of this austerity bullshit will be one of the poorest states in the Union. A state we've discussed this week, Mississippi. Yes, the state that's right on the Delta is not only going to be hit hard by the Delta variant because its residents are not getting vaccinated, but also will be, wait for it. Yes, the Delta variant will hit Mississippi very hard, but the Delta region is also going to be dealt another bad blow when the unemployment stimulus runs out. This has been Joey's Journal for Thorn in the Side, Thursday, the 24th day of June, 2021, with Giraffe looking for that rod to douse the Republicans in the Delta waters. So there's a $20 Delta Blues Challenge on the table, and that would get us down to $1,118. And 34 cents, if met. And I appreciate those who reach out to meet Joey and Giraffe's challenges. It means it means a great deal. As to summer ending, Lee in New York points out, to Steve's facts, I will add that the daylight hours are getting shorter day by day. That's why my grieving begins on the summer solstice. Because, you know, I'm one of those glass half empty people, I guess. The days were growing longer. Now they grow shorter. And sometime in September, they will be equal. The autumnal equinox marks the beginning of autumn. You know that. And we'll, and after that, they grow shorter. After the autumnal equinox, you get more darkness than daylight in the northern hemisphere. Of course, it's all flipped upside down for our friends in the southern hemisphere. So, summer solstice is their winter, so days grow longer now for our friends up over down under in Australia. Thank you, Jeremy. Jeremy just met half of the Delta Blues Challenge. Thank you, Jeremy, so very much, being there day in and day out. It does mean so very much indeed. Let's see. Hey, Robin, says Lamar the Magnificent. I have a I know who Donald J. Trump is. Trump is the Sith from Star Wars, but a stupid version. And 2024 is to be the return of the Sith. I want to call in, but been drinking, and I might not be good radio. It's your call. Yeah, I'm in a fighting mood. Fuck spelling at this time. I miss not calling in. Well, it's always better when you can make your case in a plain and straightforward and not particularly tippled fashion. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you, Ralphs, for meeting the loose change part of the challenge. We're down to $1,100, so that means we're getting very, very close to fully funding Monday. That's wonderful. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you so very much. We got $1,100 to, so that's the Thursday, Wednesday, Tuesday, and, $200 of Monday. You know, once we get into four digits, my ciphering really goes all to shit. Let's see here. By the way, I'm looking for I'm expecting a call from our pal, Paul from Parts Unknown. Somewhere around a little less than a half an hour from now, Paul from Parts Unknown said, I have a window to call in for about 20 minutes starting at, a quarter to the second hour today. So I'm looking forward to that because I'd like to see what Paul has to say about the Delta variant. Because what Jeffrey and Joey alluded to is very true. We're facing the real possibility that these geniuses in the Stan and Confederate states, you know, and look, okay, this is a little bit Alex Jonesy, Alex Jones. But would it be surprising to anybody to find that the maggots are refusing to get vaccinated to own the libs, that they're putting themselves at grave risk and those around them who are unvaccinated at grave risk by not getting the vaccine. Anatole Headon.live, I think, is in fact playing something that we're streaming. It hasn't buffered or blipped or gone down, so I don't know quite what's going on there for you. Maybe try refreshing your player. So where do we begin? It is Thorn in the Side Thursday, so let's go to the source. Nitwit Nero has been desperately trying to get people to pay attention to him all day long. He's truly pathetic. Yeah, there it is.
Can you believe that New York wants to strip Rudy Giuliani, a great American patriot, of his law license because he's been fighting what has already been proven to be a fraudulent election?
No, it hasn't already been proven to be a fraudulent election. The only, in fact, Nitwit Nero's out of his mind, and this is an overt attempt to start another insurrection. And in this case, one that he hopes will be actually successful as compared to the last one, which was a dress rehearsal.
The greatest mayor in the history of New York City, the Elliot Ness of his generation.
Really?
Rico Youngblood!
One of the greatest crime fighters our country's ever known, and this is what the radical left does to him.
We've talked about the lack of liberals and progressives within the judicial system of this country, that is pointing out that there's no such thing as an actual liberal judge. I'm pretty sure the State Bar of New York is not a gang of bomb-throwing Trotskyites. Oh, and Brother Deacon Asa pointing out we are streaming live and free and uninterrupted at headon.live. Thanks, Brother Deacon Asa. I appreciate that. The radical left has suspended his law license.
All of New York is out of control. Crime is at an all-time high. No, it isn't. It's nothing but a witch hunt, and they should be ashamed of themselves. Take back America.
You know, that take back America bullshit is nothing but a call for further insurrection, further treason. It is, in fact, further incitement. And, you know, it would be nice if somebody would charge this stupid orange fuck with incitement to riot. I mean, he's already got a couple of lawsuits in that regard. What a schmuck. And he's trying to get the same kind of goofy shit going in Michigan that he got in Arizona.
Michigan State Senators Mike Shirkey and Ed McBroom are doing everything possible to stop voter audits in order to hide the truth about November 3rd. The Senate investigation of the election is a cover-up and a method of getting out of a forensic audit of the examination of the presidential contest.
Yo, for pity's sakes. Yeah, I guess he wants the cyber ninjerks to go and spoil the ballots in Michigan, too.
Corrupt politicians falsely claimed there was no voter fraud in Michigan. Has anyone looked at what's considered the most corrupt election city in the U.S.? Detroit! It has many black people.
Okay, I added that part.
However, they admit to problems with the numbers that rigged...
Oh, Jesus Christ, it's disgusting. It really is disgusting. In fact, let's give a listen. Mr. Pillow, Mike Meth Head Lindell, that schmuck, Steve Bannon, the guy who looks like he smells like hot dogs. He's got this incredibly well-funded political right-wing maggot show. And yet still, he has to have people like Mr. Pillow on. And so Steve Bannon is also trying to foment further insurrection because, you know, he got a presidential pardon and he thinks he's untouchable. See, that was an Elliot Ness reference. And I'll tell you, right? Mm-hmm. And thanks, Sparky, for sending the video along. I'd seen the story. I had not seen the video. But did you know there's going to be a parade in D.C. in August? Yeah. Well, according to Mr. Pillow, there is. Oh, really?
And Mary Beth, my baby sister, for you're going to do a special event in August. Right?
Yes.
A special event here in D.C. in August, right? In late August?
Yeah.
In late August?
For the Cyber Symposium?
After the Cyber Symposium. That's
oh, no,
August.
No. Oh, yeah. You're talking about the inauguration.
Inauguration.
Yeah.
You guys are going to host. I'm committing right now. That this is my team.
The inauguration
this is
for Donald Trump.
This
the 2021 inauguration. Absolutely. And I will tell you this.
I want the audience.
Somebody's drinking again. The 2021 inauguration. I'm working. I'm a pretty good speller, and I think you spell inauguration, N-O-G-R-A-S-H-U-N, the 2021 inauguration parade. Yeah, I know. Going back to Elliot Ness and Nitwit Nero. Matt in San Francisco says, "Yo, Elliot Ness, oh, for fuck's sake, Grandpa, go brush your one hair. It's just very, very long." And yes. God. Elliot Ness. Speaking of ghouls, David in South Carolina, Stan. That's a cowbell for God's sake. Oh, for fuck's sake, Grandpa, go brush your one hair. That's a beautiful thing. Building on the whole trope of go brush your hair. David in South Carolina, Stan, points out, Giuliani's son blamed the DOJ, who had nothing to do with it. Well, that's the latest trope, you know, the Department of Justice. I mean, the FBI planned the January 6th insurrection and used, I guess, cleverly camouflaged Antifa, Black Lives Matter, Bureau of Land Management, Rosicrucian, Freemason, Illuminati to make it look like Nitwit Nero had done incited an attack on the Capitol. Mm-hmm. Thank you for all the confirmations, Brother Deacon Asa and others. Lee in New York, Jeremy in Vermont, HeadOn.live streaming quite well. Jeremy pointed out volume seems to be going up and down slightly, but definitely without buffering. Well, that could be because I'm moving my head around a little bit here and there around the microphone, and I should stop doing that. That's just not nice. Mm-hmm. Lisa, greatest mayor in New York City history? I call that one Fiorello LaGuardia. And I think he is still referred to as the greatest mayor in New York history. That's why they named a really bad airport after it. Never mind. Let me see here. Yeah, we'll get to it. We'll get to it. Back to the big parade. Oh, look, it's a parade. Everybody loves a parade.
The inauguration for Donald Trump, the 2021 inauguration, absolutely. And I will tell you this.
I want the audience to tell us by the thing whether these guys pass muster. So you're going to be the team. You'll do the parade. You're going to do all of it.
Absolutely. And, you know, and Jim Acosta just called me yesterday. He goes, Mike, are you talking later?
Jim Acosta? Yeah. Of course, meth can make you slur, too, can't it? Costco?
in the year? No, I said, no, Jim, it's still August. I said, we it might be a little bit later if it has to be, because we want you to show up at this cyber symposium, Jim. And I told Jim Acosta, I said, Jim, we're doing this for you, for your children, your grandchildren, so you can be a journalist. What else are you going to do? You know, I did give him credit. I said, Jim, at least you're calling me and talking about stuff, unlike Fox.
So at least they have at least...
Oh! Mr. Pillow, just to let you know, the reason Jim Acosta is calling you is because you've got real comedic value these days. It's kind of like you're just a one-man slow-moving train wreck, and everybody has to stop and stop and watch, and you're just completely off the rails and running without tracks, right down the gutter. Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, however, isn't calling you because they're trying not to smarten up the chumps who watch Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. Why do I have to explain these things?
The respect for you to call you and to find out how to get to the bottom of this. Will CNN show up?
I believe they will. Jim said they would. Jim said they would show up. I don't know if he showed up for the inauguration, though. I didn't ask him that.
It's going to be a news event.
Yeah, he should show up.
I want to hear from
him. It's going to be a news event. Man, next thing you know, I'll be saying inauguration. I swear, the tequila bottle and the swirly straw is far, far, far away. I think this shit's catching just via the interweb tubes. Inauguration. Yeah, it's going to be newsworthy. It's not every day that you get to watch somebody go absolutely screaming, mad, barking, bonkers right before your very eyes. But this is that. Yeah, I agree. Randy in PA says, Mr. Pillow can stuff it. Ugh. Well, at least nobody here is trying to sleep on one of those godforsaken things. Yes. That's a cowbell, Randy. Mr. Pillow can stuff it.
Mm-hmm. By the way, you two are not too bad. You got to quit hogging the mic though next time. By the way, on the book, she reads the book. She gets the book she gets for Valentine's Day. Two pillows and two books. She calls me up. She goes, I love Mike Lindell, but I didn't know he was a hot mess.
Yeah, she read my book.
Some poor. I don't know. Is that what Mr. Smells Like Hot Dogs was saying? Was that his baby sister Mary Beth? Is that what he was saying? As Matt in San Francisco points out, when Fox stops taking your calls, the time for quiet, institutional alone time is in order. Yes. Relax, just to sit on the front porch in a tranquil location. Rock in the rocking chair, Mr. Pillow. Rock in the rocking chair. Just rocking and rocking, Mr. Pillow. What? Huh? You ever wonder, maybe in the absence of Adderall, that you ever wonder if Mr. Pillow is Nitwit Nero's connection? What? Yeah. Those are meth noises. Not that I would know.
You know, when I did that book, I went and they're going, Mike, it stays dark for so long.
So they put up on the screen where everybody can see. The book apparently has a big smiling face, and he's wearing his little cross. What are the odds? From crack addict to CEO, Mike Lindell. I think it's time for a new edition. It's from crack addict to CEO and back to crack addict. 360 degrees, Mike Lindell.
Oh, it stays bad. I go. I'm printing the truth. I'm not going to, have it be great right away.
We got a mess. He's going to think, you think it's dark? He left out 30%, which you're going to have in the movie. Okay,
30%.
We'll be back at 5 o'clock today. But Mike Lindell.
Yeah, don't get in a hurry there, Steve. Definitely not a member of the fraternity of Steve's. No. But I had a note from Ron in Raleigh for this thorn in the side Thursday. Bipartisan? Really? I've just been listening to President Biden gloating and bragging about the so-called infrastructure bill. In his desire to have bipartisanship, I believe he's allowed himself to be rickrolled. Do you trust Republicans to allow Joe a win? Well, I got to tell you that the answer to that is no, I don't. Because Mitch McConnell, long game and all of that silly horseshit. Watch Mitch and the Republicans in the Senate to whittle away at this bill until there's little left. Then they'll vote against it. Joe has a case of Obama-osis. He will draw back a bloody stump in his attempt to reach across the aisle. It has seemed, at least a little bit, in the early days of this administration, like they were a little bit more, a tad more cognizant of just how awful the Republicans are. It remains to be seen if the whole bipartisanitis thing will be as controlling as I fear it may. Eesh. It remains to be seen. And of course, it would be improper. I mean, it's not exactly. This is one of those, if it bleeds, it leads kind of stories. A horrifying thought. The collapse today of a 40-year-old condo tower, Champlain Towers South, 12 stories of condos, that pancaked in the town of Surfside, Florida, just before 2 a.m. this morning. About half of the more than 130 units in the 12-story building were affected. And there, at least one person's dead, 10 are injured. I've seen estimates that as many as 89 people are unaccounted for. No one really knows why the building collapsed at this point. Rescue workers are going as fast as they can, working as hard as they can to try to find survivors in the rubble. The collapse was so profound that dust and debris coated cars as far away as two blocks from the building. I just got a note from Scary Jerry, and I was hoping I would hear from him. 20 minutes from Surfside, he says, I think the building collapse changes things. I drove past that building yesterday. I woke up at 1 o'clock this morning, and a voice said, don't check your phone. I'm almost hesitant to even whisper this into the universe because, we're so good at predicting the behavior of the whack-a-mole right wing that you can almost already hear them over on their various and sundry channels and whatnot, hopping up and down and monkey grunting away about how, Joe Biden done dude this. He used his secret Biden powers to bring that building down to try to make it like we really need infrastructure repair in Merkel. He dude it along with that cabal of Illuminati fascist communist Shriner Black Lives Matter Antifa. Of course, the problem is, as Darlene points out, people who deal with structural issues have known that that building had been sinking into the earth as early as the 1990s, according to researchers. It was sinking at about 2 millimeters a year, according to a study from 2020. Yeah. Jesus. And if you've, it was built in 1981. Dear God, the year I graduated from high school. And I'm sure it was certainly fabulous then. And maybe a wonderful place to live. It's right there on the beach. You can, in an aerial view, you can see the beach from, it was just back, oh, not very far at all off of the, and it must have been just gorgeous, there must have just been gorgeous views of it. But the problem is, if you've ever read one of the novels by Carl Hiaasen or Dave Barry or any of the people who specialize in wacky, zany Florida fiction, you'll know that one of the things that most marks Florida is the corruption in its construction industry, from hurricane-proofing houses and the like to the construction of, well, even high-rise condominiums. In point of fact, in the article that Darlene sent along, Shimon Woodwinski, a professor in the Department of Earth and Environment at Florida International University, said, I looked at it this morning and I said, oh my God, we did detect that. He noted the 2 millimeter sink rate since the 1990s. He said it could have slowed or accelerated in that time. Well, I would say as of about 2 o'clock this morning, it accelerated rather profoundly. And once again, maybe we can, maybe going forward, there should be a, and there are people who engage in this conversation about Florida. Florida is known for not being particularly stable ground, but it doesn't slow the building boom. I've mentioned in the past that I'm a big fan of the John D. MacDonald, Travis McGee series of novels. Like I've said before, it's a neat kind of cultural trip through, beginning in 1964 and up into like 1982 with the last one. And in the Travis McGee novels, you can see the culture of Florida changing. And a lot of people have been worried for a long time about the fact that Florida is an extremely fragile place to overpopulate. Generally speaking, the earth doesn't handle overpopulation with humans very well. Some places handle it worse than others. Anyway, Professor Woodwinski said it was a byproduct of analyzing the data. We saw this building had some kind of unusual movement. But on the other hand, Daniel Deitch, who was the mayor of Surfside for 10 years up till last year, said, this is an extraordinarily unusual event, and it's dangerous and counterproductive to speculate on its cause. Because there's a certain contingent of people who say, yeah, but what about our economy? On the other hand, I guess the paranoia is ramping up a bit. Surfside Town Commissioner Eliana Saltzhauer said, this was not an act of God. This was not a natural disaster. Buildings don't just fall. Oh, God. I guess we're going to have a wave of Surfside truthers now. Has Alex Jones jumped behind the microphone yet to yell, false flag, false flag? I don't know. We'll talk about that some more later, but I suspect that this is our dear friend Paul from Parts Unknown, and I'm really eager to chat with him. Hey, Paul, how are you? That is you, right?
Yes, Robin, it's me. Long time no hear.
It's been a while, and I know you've got a very limited window of opportunity to chat, so I thank you for spending your time with us.
Oh, sure. I'm glad that the window exists for today.
So let me start off by asking you a general question. How are you?
Better and worse. My niece, who is sick, is doing better, but she still can't take the vaccine because her immune system is eating her alive. But they're managing the symptoms and actually have specialists on it. I'm back on day shifts. So I work, instead of working from 2 in the afternoon to 11 o'clock at night or later, I work from about 9 to 10 o'clock and get home around 7, which is starting this week, which is much nicer, which is one of the reasons I'm able to call you. I'm on an extended lunch break.
Yeah, almost feels like being a human being, right?
Yeah, but dealing, we can finally go out and have fun, but it's 100 degrees outside, so no one wants to.
100 degrees in parts unknown is going to be kind of brutal.
Yep, that's the forecast this weekend, 100 and above, but that's most of the Western United States. Just as a short story from the lab I work at, that we make two of the components for the COVID-19 test kit, so we're very worried about the virus getting in there. Vaccination rates at the site are pretty high. They were so high, in fact, that last week they put out a notice that said if you are vaccinated and passed your 2-week post-second shot date and registered with the company that you've done that, you know, you just take a picture of your vaccine card and upload it into their system to prove that you've done it, you can have your mask off at work. And so that's been going on for about a week now. And we already have one person out sick. No news on whether they're vaccinated or not.
At the lab, yep.
And they're starting to crank down procedures in response. So they're analyzing it and taking a look at it. So just as I've kept informing the Horn community, I recommend doing what we do. And I also have to regret to inform people that the very sick coworker we had from COVID that was being hospitalized on a ventilator passed away last week.
And this
is a person who was following all our protocols to the letter. They had to. They worked in a department. They interacted with all of the departments. They were on the facilities crew. They went and analyzed instruments in each lab and fixed things. So they were especially careful. And you can do everything right, and you can think you're safe, and it's still a danger out there.
Realistically speaking, there's no such thing as safe, is there?
No, that's called life. But also, just real quick, as a side note, before we go into deep details, two quick things. It was supposed to be the summer of Robin, and in that fashion, in Seinfeldian fashion, it was supposed to be the summer of Robin, but I donated some money to the passed away co-workers GoFundMe to help support their family because they were the single job earner.
I'm so glad you did.
And my house sensed that I have money saved up, so the freezer broke. So we had to. The cost of a new freezer.
Yeah, these are not inanimate objects. They're tapped into the life of the planet too. They know when to break down. It's intentional.
So I did have other challenges planned for the month, but I'm tapped out. So just a $100 for today until the end of the week, for today and tomorrow. It was supposed to be the Summer of Robin Challenge. Just going to throw that out there. I don't know where fundraising is. I'm behind shows, but you're rarely caught up.
We're trying to crawl out from under $1,100 this evening, so that helps tremendously. Right. So you'll match the next $100 that comes in. Is that true?
I will. I will absolutely match the next $100 that came in. I had a I had a grandiose plan to do three large challenges in the month of June to help get things going, but I am now tapped out between those two things.
Well, that's more than understandable, and our thoughts go out to the family of your coworker. That's just horrifying. Can you speak to? I mean, was it the Delta variant, or I mean, because he was vaccinated, right?
I can't say for certain. HIPAA laws prevent the employer from asking about your vaccination status directly. And also they protect your information. So if he was vaccinated and had reported into the system, but he got sick in March, late April. He got sick in April. He got better. He was still quarantined. And then as most of these stories go, about 4 weeks after he started feeling better, he started feeling worse and got massive symptoms that carried him through May. So I don't think he ever got the chance to be vaccinated.
Oh, my God.
He was on a ventilator for about 6 weeks.
Do things like this change the way that the institutions view going without a mask, Paul?
I don't know. I do know that he caught it from outside the lab. That was the only thing that they told us. They keep people's medical information pretty private at work, and I know that they're very worried about it getting into the lab. Still, they're very worried about the Delta variant because it's much more contagious, and they're just keeping their eye on the ball at work, and they're now in discussions again because we were open for a week and someone got sick with it. So we're locking it back down. And I do not know if this person who's out sick, they have COVID-like symptoms, but they haven't been tested yet. The results will be coming in the next like 24 hours. We'll probably find out tomorrow whether or not this person has COVID. But they don't take any risks. So you have COVID-like symptoms or even cold-like symptoms, get out and come and take a test and come back and talk to us when you feel better. When you're quarantined,
where you are, what does that do to the workforce and the ability to get the job done and the ability to manufacture these testing components when you start having people have to go out?
I would say that at the level it is right now, you feel safe because we've had to say seven positive tests since last late July, so almost a year. So when you have a few cases a year and they take care of it and there are no more cases and they keep it contained, you feel safe about it. If there were like no cases, there's always the question of whether it really worked. And if you have tons of cases, you ask, is what you're doing working? So I think it's the right balance. People feel bad, but they just keep trudging along and keep making the stuff and keep doing what they're doing. And the side is, you know, morale is down because this person is going to be missed, and everyone was hoping that he'd pull through. And the recent passing is a blow. You can definitely feel around the site. It's quieter. People talk less.
I don't even want to try to imagine, frankly. You have been such an integral part of our understanding of how to think about the virus, Paul. What is your life outside the lab like these days?
Well, I just had the 1 week, and I can still only be outdoors with people. So it was nice to, I've been to like two social events with friends in the past couple weeks. So that part's getting really a lot better, but, it's been nice kind of realigning with my family. I've usually been sleeping until 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning, so I forgot that there's morning craziness. My morning involved a medical procedure, a veterinary medical procedure, and an IT request before I went to work today because everything was crazy. But that's parenting.
Right, and there's a new puppy in the house, right?
Yep, that would be the Tupelo. I sent you some pics. We have been fostering puppies through a rescue. It was an idea that my wife and I always talked about, but we implemented over the pandemic to keep our 10-year-old sane-er. And she's been having lots of fun with it. And then we just found a puppy that we fell in love with. The mom, we've had her since she was 2 or 3 days old. The mom had just given birth when we got her. The mom's name was Honeybun, so we named all the puppies types of honey. So Tupelo was the one we kept, and she's adorable. And she's out there. She's out there having fun. The other two names are Jara, which is a eucalyptus type of honey, and Manuka, who ended up being adopted by some family friends of ours. So we get to have sister play dates when things go back to normal.
Gosh, if there'd been another puppy, you could have named it Sourwood. Sourwood is one of my favorite honeys. Well, so can we talk a little bit about where we are relative to, because, you know, we're being warned by the federal government, by President Biden et al., that the Delta variant could be a real kick in the shins, especially in the less vaccinated portions of the country. What can you tell us about the Delta variant, as you understand, that makes it so much worse?
Well, it's more contagious, and that's what makes it worse. So it's, you don't have the protection of the summer that you did last year from COVID, with the UV light and the heat and the dryness of the air, because when it passes through aerosol, the virus isn't just floating in the air by itself. It's trapped within a water droplet. And so the drier the air, the less time the water droplet lasts. And when it evaporates completely, the virus is not aerodynamic. It will just fall to the ground, kind of like a feather or a leaf on a microscopic scale. And basically it can't, you know, they're fragile things. I mean, if you step on them and stuff, you can crush them and damage them and to the point. And they also can't, they're not mobile at that point when they're on the ground. So they just die. And then the UV sun destroys them as well. So they die out in the sun and just dry out quickly. But when they're more contagious, there's either less virus particles needed to infect you, or they've figured out a way to last longer in the air and be tougher. And the real, I hope this doesn't happen, but you have to understand, this is the best analogy I can give with mutations. Everybody loves Powerball and Mega Millions and playing the lottery, but let's just focus on Mega Millions and Powerball, where your chances of coming up with a winning number is like 1 in 300 million, roughly. Well, every time the virus infects a new person around the world, it's buying a lottery ticket for a mutation, just one. But once you start infecting hundreds of millions of people at a time, if the odds are 1 in 300 million to win the mutation lottery jackpot, when you infect 300 million people, odds are there's going to be a mutation in there. So the Delta variant is not done mutating. It's constantly moving and mutating, so it's more contagious. Well, it will only continue to be more contagious when it starts infecting more people, and a mutation could occur to infect more people that can beat the vaccination, that can beat the vaccine defense, because that's the direction it can go. The vaccine is kind of like a big dam holding back water, and if you keep putting water pressure on it and keep exposing people to a contagious variant that doesn't affect you because you have the vaccine, eventually it will win the jackpot and get around the vaccine. So I try to warn people, we are all in this together, as the song goes. You can't just write off the Southeast and go, they're only at 30% vaccination. They're fucking stupid. That's their problem. I'm safe over here on the West Coast. Well, you know what? That's what the South thought about India when the Delta virus was created. This stuff travels. There's enough vaccinated people for the Delta variant in there to be exposed to it, so it could possibly overcome it, with enough unvaccinated people to keep the fuel in the tank to keep it reinfecting and going to more people. And there is a poor to fair chance, I don't know the numbers, that you can crack out another variant from the South over the fall and winter that is the Delta variant that has all the fun of be more contagious. Plus, it can beat the vaccine better, and then we're right back to square one.
Square one, like when this thing first first broke out.
Yeah, I mean, and develop a new vaccine and start over again. But wait, it's 50% more contagious, which means you're going to have, remember that number, 50% more contagious. One of your talks, you said, but like if 10,000 people were exposed to normal COVID, you'd have like 100 deaths. And if the lethality went up, you'd have like 150. If the lethality went up by 50%, but if the contagiousness goes up by 50% in that 10,000 population, you jump from like 100 deaths to like 900 deaths. And again, I'm estimating the numbers because it's been a few months since you put out that report, which was accurate. But contagiousness is exponential. It's jet fuel in the tank of this thing. So we're concerned. We're watching it, and no one seems to be fully explained of the full risk of what's happening here. Because a lot of people feel they're vaccinated, they're safe, and especially if they're in a high vaccination, they're going to be safe. But keep on it, keep monitoring it, and just understand that this could happen. It could also not happen. So, it just depends on how many lottery tickets the virus buys.
So what would be your thoughts regarding traveling in? I mean, let's say you've got someone who's fully vaccinated traveling into the unvaccinated zones, like say going down to Myrtle Beach or something.
Every place you travel that you're in range of being exposed to the virus, you are potentially buying a lottery ticket for that virus to mutate, vaccine or no. So it's really more about what the status is the COVID risk status in the area you're visiting. So if you're visiting somewhere where the status is moderate to low, you're probably okay. If Myrtle Beach is at a high point when you go there, then you're putting yourself at risk. They've informed us that we have the masks off here at the site, and we have these new protocols where we can be with vaccinated people unmasked outdoors for an unlimited period of time. But they've made it clear that if the county we live in goes from the low risk where it's currently at back up to high, they're going to lock us down again. And again, and they've also communicated to us, it's not about you. It's not about your behavior. It's not about you screwing up. It's just about living in the environment you live. And if it's just like if there's a fire break in your county in this county and there's smoke in the air, if it's smoky outside, you stay indoors. It's sort of the same thing. Would you travel to Myrtle Beach if it was on fire and there was smoke in the air? Probably not. It'll ruin your vacation.
Makes perfectly so, good makes perfectly like good sense. Time draws short, and I can't thank you enough for jumping in, Paul. But
I just wanted to say one more thing on the lab leak theory, because more information has come in. And if you go back to the Texas Hold'em analogy of China having a straight flush or a royal flush with one spade on the table of three cards and everyone freaking out, there's another spade that's been dropped on the table that I've been really kind of looking and researching it and listening to stuff. They have tested over 80,000 wild animal samples in the Wuhan region of various animals and have found no natural occurring source of COVID yet. Now, that does possibly mean that it possibly, again, came from a lab or got juiced up in a lab. But it could also mean, because China's not really talking to us, it could also mean that they traced it to possibly one of these wet markets, grabbed every animal they could, because the wet market is where it bred in, and roasted them alive and destroyed the evidence and just got rid of the problem and eliminated the source of the wild infection for us to trace. So just like the poker, if China was completely innocent in this analogy, they would have no hand. They'd have no cards in their hand. If they were sinister and ruthless and trying to cause a war or bioweapon, that's the straight flush or the royal flush. But there's a lot of hands in between. It could be a flush, a straight, a three of a kind, and that could just be we screwed up. But I still come back. My wife thinks the lab leak theory is more viable, and I keep coming back to her and saying, the Wuhan lab is a BSL-2 lab. and they've talked talking points after that about saying, well, that's about the same level of protection at a dentist office. Bad analogy. Technically, yes. Technically, no. But you have to understand that these are scientists working on the virus. There's no ignorance involved. If you're juicing up a virus for cause of function research and you're the scientist doing it, you know you're doing it. So you're either doing it under poor safety conditions, under duress from the government because they want to hide the fact. But in general, you're going to go, especially in Asian cultures, they tend to even be more paranoid about disease because of their history. You're going to go, F no, I'm not doing this, or I'm taking extra precautions, or personally, or whatever. You can't be fooled. You know the science. You know what you're doing to the thing. You know the risk and the danger involved.
Well, I trust that you saw. I trust that you saw the remarks that, heard about the remarks that Jon Stewart made on Stephen Colbert's program, where he said the name of the lab is the Wuhan COVID Research Lab, which turned out not to be true.
Well, it's a coronavirus lab, but yeah, but it surprised me too, but it's just not explained in context. Do you know why that lab is there in the first place?
No.
It was built post-SARS in the early 2000s, which is another coronavirus. It was built, they basically said, hey, there's a lot of animals in mixing here, and this SARS came out of here, and the next one's probably going to come out of here again, so let's build a lab to monitor it. Much like the lab in Ashland, Oregon, on the southern border of Oregon, northern border of California, there's a lot of mountains and wild areas, and I know that, and there are still anywhere between 1 and 20 cases of bubonic plague in America every year. And what this lab does is they go out there and they research it. They gather pathological samples. They do a lot of other things too, but this is one of their functions. And they bring it back and test to monitor the spread of disease. And if they see it outbreaking, not just bubonic plague, but rabies and all sorts and other zoological infections that would be similar to coronavirus, possibly that could jump to humans like a bird flu or something, they monitor it. And if they see that the pathology sample is starting to rise on positives, they take measures to – sorry, there's a big truck going by. They take measures to shut off that area, to close it down, to – they may ban hunting or poaching or whatever they can from the area. In America, they would close down an area to hikers and stuff to stop human traffic from going in there for a while until things calm down. And the Wuhan lab, I would imagine, would do something similar. We might know more if Trump hadn't fired the person that was there monitoring the situation on our side.
I always come back to that. None of this had to happen, save for the fact that he canned everybody who, from the American side, who was working alongside the Chinese scientists to make sure that this didn't happen. And then, lo and behold, it happened. Do you think that's just dumb, stupid, bad luck? Or, well, I don't even want to say the other part out loud.
I think it's easier to lie when you're not monitoring data. I think that's the crux of it. I think that, you can make up anything you want if you're not watching, and you can save money by not paying people to watch. And besides, you don't need them watching because you're stealing. So you don't want them to watch in the first place. So you're against watchers to begin with because they're going to go, hey, you're stealing or grifting or whatever. So it's sort of, I find in my personal belief in life is most things build upon themselves. It's not some grand conspiracy or grand plan. It's just actions and consequences and more actions to deal with those consequences.
And
so
they
you don't want watchers because they make you look bad.
Yeah, and they just pile one atop the other.
Yeah. But just my opinion, something happened in Wuhan. We don't have the full story. It doesn't have to be nefarious. It can be embarrassing. If you remember, and I could be off in the timing, but during the whole COVID start, wasn't there a massive protest in Hong Kong with the students?
Yes. Yes.
So as a government, you might not want to look weak in front of the protest. You don't want a protest going on and also, hey, we screwed up on this. These protesters saying that we're oppressive and we suck and we can't cut it. And oh, by the way, we let a massive disease out in Wuhan because we don't know what the hell we're doing. You're absolutely going to cover up that message to stop yourself from looking weak because the political especially among the youth in China, the political stability is not good because people are fed up and pushing back, especially at that time. So there's lots of reasons to cover up and hide stuff, and it doesn't have to be nefarious. It can just be embarrassing, or it can give fuel to your political adversaries and kick you out of office. So what work I've done on the lab leak, something happened, and I don't think it's the straight or royal flush of nefarious bioweapon engineering or anything of that nature. And I think it's just they screwed up, they missed something, especially with those six workers in the lab. It just sounds more plausible that someone was out in the field, they got exposed to the virus not knowing that it was dangerous or what was going on because they were just taking samples at biohazard level 2 protocols, because that's what you do, because biohazard 3 and 4 about stopping diseases from getting outside. You are outside. The disease is already out there. You don't need to take those kind of safety measures. And then not realizing what it is because you haven't analyzed it, you take it back to the lab, you start analyzing it under biosafety level 2 conditions, you get sick from it, and you spread it to your other lab mates because you're in a biosafety level 2, which is about protecting the scientists, not stopping an unknown disease from spreading outside. We actually made a joke about a month ago because at the lab, because supply chains are low, are hurting, and it's hard to get parts and pieces to certain things, and we've had to find backups, and it's a lot of paperwork and annoying. But we needed a freezer was breaking down, and we needed new freezer parts, and we couldn't get any because all parts have priority if they're COVID related. And I'm like, we do COVID test kit stuff here. Just tell them it's COVID related. It wasn't, but it's like, just, we were joking, you know, just tell them it's COVID related. And it's like, this is a BSL-2 lab. COVID's BSL-3. And I'm like, technically it's not. What happens if we let COVID escape from this lab? We've already caused a pandemic. It's already outside. Horse, barn door closed. It's technically a BSL-2 because if it escapes from the lab, it doesn't harm the greater society more than it already has.
Well, let me. Yeah, I get sort of a gallows humor when you get down to it. I had a note from Darlene in Connecticut. She said, "Please ask Paul, is it possible the animal-to-human transfer in the wet market that gave rise to COVID-19 was so unique that it was a one-off that went badly, horribly wrong, that no matter how many animals the Chinese test in nature, it won't reveal the virus?"
Highly unlikely, but anything is possible. Again, we don't have the data. If they are correct that this thing progressed very fast to jump to humans, but again, if you're in a wet market with a variety of animals, there's also a variety of people in there, the animal handlers. The virus can be in animal A, rub off on the animal handler, and then it gets exposed to humans a little bit and gets used to that. And then they touch another different animal, and that passes it on to animal B. And then it can, once it starts cross-jumping between multiple animals, just understand the wet market, there's a human involved at every point of contact if they're in separate cages. And so it's constantly being exposed to humans. But again, we just don't have the data, so
yeah, you might. Just to be a little mm-hmm. more detailed. So let's say in that market situation, there's a bat merchant, and there's a pangolin merchant, and there's a monkey merchant, and so the thing is, it's conceivable that the thing is pinballing back and forth and evolving a little bit with everything it touches, because these pseudo living forms of existence, it's really all they have to do. Otherwise, they just sit there. So when it pinballs, it learns a little more, and it bounces, and it hits something else and says, oh, here's another life form, and it bounces off of that and hits it. Oh, here's another one. And what you described about it is exactly what I posited in the past, that if you had six scientists, my God, that's a tongue twister. If you had six scientists in the Wuhan lab, that it's in, that it's every bit as possible that they carried it, that somebody carried it into the lab as it is that it came out of it. I would say that maybe there's even a greater likelihood, right?
Yeah, and also it's about the data. If those six scientists in the lab were all in the same lab, then okay, maybe something leaked in the lab. But if they're, you know, it's a big building with multiple labs. My site has 15, 16 different laboratories, and we don't talk to each other. We don't interact with each other except in common spaces for lunch briefly. If it's six different scientists that are spread across different laboratories around the building, that points to an outside infection coming in and people spreading it between people in meetings and in common spaces like lunch breaks.
Okay, what about, you had mentioned in your previous letter, what about the biomarkers? Anything on that? I mean, are there any finger, is there any more information about fingerprints?
No, nothing like that. That would have jumped out. Well, there's so many people looking at COVID, scientists looking at COVID in the beginning, that would have jumped out early. Some scientists would have blown the whistle. You gave access to the DNA of the virus to everybody, including the WHO, and the WHO is generally been pretty forthright in their reputation, and they would have gone, this is wrong, and there would have been like, it's just too obvious. Like I said before, you can't hide, like if it's Prince sampled and recording on your new song as a backup singer, and you broadcast that to the world, some listener somewhere is going to say that's Prince. And post about it or talk about it or question it somewhere. And all these scientists have looked at it. It's near impossible to imagine something that blatant would have just stood out that any scientist would have gone, no, something's wrong here. Why are there measles genes in this virus? Or why are there smallpox genes in this virus? Because we have a huge genetic library called BLAST. It's an acronym. And you can basically upload any DNA from there you want, and it will match to the library to give you common sources from almost any organism found on Earth. So anyone that inputs that DNA into BLAST will come back and go, what the hell happened here? And so I think that if that kind of thing was in there, it would have popped out more than enough by now after a year.
It almost has to be, I just had a note, and I know you've got to go, but I just had a note from Brother Deacon Asa, who said, as someone who has been to these wet markets in China, I can tell you that the type of people who work under those conditions hardly occupy themselves with matters of cross contamination and cleanliness. Ever seen a woven basket full of live snakes for sale? It stays with you for a minute.
Yeah. And like I was saying, just understand that there are multiple possibilities here. It might not be a lab leak. It might have torn through the lab because they were onto something and didn't understand how big it was. And it might have been something that they were playing with a little bit and got out. But again, when you're playing with that kind of stuff, it's super secret. And it's usually in a high level BSL 3 or 4 lab that with lockdown procedures and a whole thing. Like you just.
As secret squirrel stuff goes, it's pretty stupid to bump off a whole bunch of your own people as a means of getting something going to, I don't know, cripple the world economy, Dr. Evil style.
Yeah. It's the equivalent of trying to hide a nuclear missile program inside, you know, the basement of a Chuck E. Cheese. Like, I mean, you could do that, but why would you do something so insane? I mean, it's pretty obvious to anyone walking through the Chuck E. Cheese, there's a huge damn missile silo in the middle of the room and the missile that goes through the middle of the place with it sticking out of the roof. I mean, and you could say, that's just a Chuck E. Cheese, but anyone looking at it would be like, there's something here.
It's a missile
that's really
silo.
Weird.
Yeah. Paul, I can't thank you enough because you do such a fantastic job of making this incredibly confusing stuff both approachable and accessible to the rest of us. And I hope you know how much it means and how helpful it is, because I'm afraid I've run well past your lunch break.
Yeah, well, thanks, and I appreciate accolades from it. And thanks. And it's also being on the autism spectrum thing. I've had to just the master of analogy thing has come out because I've just had to explain to people in ways they can understand about just how I experience reality. So science helps experiencing it, runs in tandem with explaining the scientific stuff.
Well, it's sort of, there's a certain beauty to neuro-non-typicality, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I just, it's frustrating. I feel good getting these words out because it's, there are these experts that come on and they say stuff, and yes, it's truthful, but it makes no sense in the sense of, yes, it's possible the Chinese could be hiding a nuclear missile silo inside a Chuck E. Cheese, but and that's the answer. There's no follow up. But that would be absolutely ridiculous. And how would they hide that? And there would be signs. And we've checked out that Chuck E. Cheese to the best of our ability. And while there's no current missile silo in it, we can scan around with the radioactive scanners and Geiger counters, and we don't get a blip on it. You have to understand that trying to hide stuff from scientists, you're trying to hide it from the CSI TV show crew. We're going to find stuff, even stuff that maybe doesn't tell us what the truth is, but it'll tell us you're lying. And that's the stage we're at. We're seeing some stuff that's telling us that we don't know the whole story from China. But just because we don't know the whole story doesn't mean that people that want the conspiracy theory to be true are right. It just means that the story that we were given from China was not true. And did you really expect it to be true in the first place? I would say no.
Right. And the people who want the conspiracy theory to be true, the thing about people who posit conspiracy theories is that they themselves have an ulterior motive in backing them. And as I've said before, that's what continues to scare the bejesus out of me. Somebody wants to shoot at somebody. That's usually the lesson from all of this.
Yes, and if I were, I mean, one of my very good friends who is not from America taught me a very interesting thought lesson, which is just look at it as someone who's not American. Look at it from someone who's outside your country. And so look at it from China. Okay, we might have made a mistake with COVID, but let's look at America. Well, there was Trump as president, and now Biden's president. That's good, but they keep saying they're going to overturn him. There was an insurrection that they're not investigating, and crime and gun shootings are up, and everyone's angry. Maybe this isn't the best time to come clean about our fuck-up.
Wow. That's perfect, Paul. Maybe this isn't the best time to come clean about how badly we fucked up.
Yeah. Because you have Republicans looking for any excuse to take the heat off of the insurrection and everything that we do. Like, it's just not a good time. It's the same thing of, like, you know, if you're as a teenager, if you took the car without permission and you scratched up the car a little bit, it's hard to see unless you're looking for it, and you pull in the garage and you got every intention of maybe telling your parents or your siblings that you screwed up, and you come in and there's a huge shouting match because something else is going on and everyone's yelling at each other, you're going to shut up.
Yeah, some other day.
I mean,
yeah.
I would.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. When things calm down, I think it would be a good time. I don't feel like being screamed at for a minor mistake because everyone's massively emotionally charged.
You make so much good sense, Paul. I can't thank you enough.
I learned a lot from you.
that is high praise indeed. Well, yeah, and get back at it, and I look forward to hearing from you as soon as you possibly can, and I know you'll keep us up to date on what you can keep us up to date on, and I can happily tell you that Kevin has jumped in on your Summer of Robin Part 2 challenge, and so we got about $70 to go on that, and that is so helpful, and thank you again. So, and just the very concept of the Summer of Robin, Paul, I mean, I just love that. That's just a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Well, you're welcome, and I really wanted it to be so. You've gone through a lot, and I've been listening for a long time, and you had about 6 months before you and your family went on that cruise ship that's an anonymous donor so nicely paid for, like a liberal cruise down there. And
yeah, the Lib Boat.
The Turks and the Lib Boat. You had this tenseness in your voice because you were just, you've had enough, and you've been working nonstop and doing a lot of stress, and
you sound so much more relaxed. And while I don't think that's possible now, I was just trying to give you a little piece of that to breathe, because digging out from holes is not fun.
No, and it does. It brings on a whole lot of stress, and I know you know what that is, and there are so many more people who have dealt with so much more stress. But stress is stress, you know, from one person to another. Darlene is just blown away by everything you've said this evening, Paul. What Paul just pointed out was amazing, Darlene says. So, again, thank you so much. And please give our best to your family and the deep sympathy and heartfelt grief for the family of your coworker. You know, these things stop being statistics and start being human moments when we can connect the way that you've helped us to do. And I thank you for it. And I hope something can assuage their grief. Although, my God, how? What?
Yeah, it's not good. But thank you for the wishes, and I got to go. And good luck. And don't forget, it was supposed to be the Summer of Robin Challenge. Finish it out. Thank you, Kevin, for contributing. And on with the show.
Indeed.
Bye, Robin.
Thank you, Paul. Later. Bye. Paul from Parts Unknown never ceases to amaze me. What an amazing conversation. And he cites his neuro-non-typicality for his ability to make things approachable. If that's what it is, that's what it is. But I tend to ascribe it myself to just what an intensely thoughtful person Paul is. And working where he works, you know, he wants everybody, as we do throughout this community, he wants everybody to stay safe and come out the far end of this thing. You know, there were so many things I wanted to ask him, some of which there just wasn't time for. I'm watching and I'm seeing more stories and I'm hearing more in the broader media about booster shots, and they're trying to figure out, do we need them? And one of the things, you know, one of the things that they're watching for, the scientists, is, you know, does the disease start affecting people who have been vaccinated, or when we find out a little bit more about how long immunity itself lasts, then that'll tell us more. But apparently work is proceeding on whatever a booster shot is going to be. I presume that because we know what the Delta variant is and it's out there and moving around, that the scientists are deconstructing it and trying to find out where its vulnerabilities lie. But ultimately, the problem becomes the fact that, damn it, and I alluded to this earlier, what do you think the odds are that, and we know that it's about 30 to 40% of the electorate of this country, what do you think the odds are that the maggots are non-vaccinating to own the libs, and therefore placing themselves at risk and placing the rest of us at risk, and becoming bioterrorists, unmitigated bioterrorists in their own right? And what of the people who spread? And I hesitate to throw around words like wicked, but if the word applies at all, this is one of those moments. I mean, it is wicked. It is truly, genuinely wicked for people who speak to millions to downplay the dangers of this virus. You know, and I'm certainly not saying that, that goon from last night, Robin Bullock, I'm not saying he speaks to millions, but he's a case in point. And I pointed it out during when we were running the clip last night. The guy starts out and he almost says back when Biden was elected, and he has to double clutch and stop and say, well, you know, when he was artificially put into office or something. and you know, to claim to be operating from some mandate from some sort of sky spook. That really is. That is a level of genuine bioterroristic malevolence. And there's a story out today about a new book from a pair of Washington Post reporters, Yasmin Abu Taleb and Damian Paletta. It'll be released on June the 29th. I suspect no small number of people will want to read this. The title of the book is Nightmare Scenario, Inside the Trump Administration's Response to the Pandemic That Changed History. The Post published an excerpt today. Oh, and by the way, thank you to Jeremy in Vermont. Jeremy sending a note saying, add this to the Summer of Robin as well. So we are now, 40. $40 into Paul from Parts Unknown Summer of Robin Challenge, and I can't thank you enough. Thank you so much. If we can do that, we will get down to just Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday to fund. So in Nightmare Scenario, Inside the Trump Administration's Response to the Pandemic That Changed History, and the excerpt published today, one of the things that they point out is that back when he himself had the Rona, that nitwit COVID Caligula's blood oxygen level, you know, on the pulse oximeter, dropped somewhere below 90%. And if you go below 90%, that's where the CDC says, get them on oxygen and do it quick. So, for instance, you know, that guy, that goon, Rick Wiles, who claimed that the Chi-Coms were trying to bump him off. Well, he was on oxygen, so that means his blood oxygen dropped below 90%. That 90% threshold really tells you how fragile we little bipedal hairless apes are. We have a hard time staying alive when blood oxygen drops below 90%. That's really, really fragile. And we very, very few of us run at 100%, you know, 99, 98. There's very little margin for error in our existence. So back when he was close, Nitwit Nero was genuinely close to becoming the first president to die in office since 1963. His physicians went absolutely sweat condition alpha, and the authors report Trump's doctors threw everything they could at the virus all at once. They dumped monoclonal antibodies in him. They dumped remdesivir in him. They gave him dexamethasone. And you generally only get dexamethasone if you're really, 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 really sick. And that's why he was walking around saying he wanted to rip his shirt off, because he was roided out of his mind. He was, according to the two reporters, Abu Taleb and Paletta, the president was on a dizzying array of emergency medicines by now, all at once. You can find the excerpt in today's Washington Post. But we weren't really told that. We were told that he was sick. We were told that he had been put on oxygen, or maybe he hadn't been put on oxygen. The Nitwit Nero administration got downright Soviet in their clampdown. Well, I didn't mean to be so adopted. It's not an insult. We're all little hairless apes. Jeremy in Vermont says, stop telling me I'm a small little hairless bipedal monkey, Robin. It ain't true. I was made in God's image, and he weren't no chimp. You do that Southern Baptist thing all too well, Jeremy. You really, really do. And thank you to Karen. Karen just jumped in, and we are now down to $35 to go on the Summer of Robin Challenge. Thank you. Thank you, Karen. That's tremendous and incredibly helpful. So maybe we can meet that challenge, and that'll be huge for where we are. Thank you. And, you know, not only was Nitwit Nero near death, but on top of that, what we now know as well is that when he got off Marine One and went up on the balcony and was huffing and chuffing, trying to get up the stairs to the Truman balcony, and he yanked off his face mask and the maggots, you know, hopped up and down and barked and grunted and hooted and squealed. Well, according to the excerpt in today's Washington Post, facing the cameras from the balcony, he used his right hand to unhook the mask loop from his right ear and then raised his left hand to pull the mask off his face. He was heavily made up, his face more orange-tinted than in the photos from the hospital. The helicopter's rotors were still spinning. He put the mask into his right pocket as if he was discarding it once and for all, and then raised both hands in a thumbs up. He was still probably contagious, standing there for all the world to see. He made a military salute as the helicopter departed the South Lawn and then strode into the White House, passing staffers on his way and failing to protect them from the virus particles emitted from his filthy nose and mouth. I added the filthy. And, of course, we recall back then that at that point in time, the White House became its own little super spreader event. And the report goes on and on and on, pointing out that, among other things, White House Chief of Staff and pathological liar, I added that part, Mark Meadows, according to his colleagues, was absolutely consumed with terror that COVID Caligula might become an ex-president in fairly short order. Nonetheless, he refused to let people wear masks in his presence. He wouldn't wear a mask himself. He would not socially distance. And Mark Meadows, meanwhile, just tried to whistle past the, both figuratively and literally, in a sense, whistled past the graveyard. And among other things, they kept Mike Pencilneck Geek in the dark as to how they would go about swearing him in under one or more aspects of the 25th Amendment if COVID Caligula became incapacitated. And that particular October weekend, according to the article, well, Robert Redfield, who was running the Centers for Disease Control, I kind of hate to hear this about someone who is trained in the sciences. Dr. Redfield spent that weekend a-praying. Yeah, pray louder, Christian. Your God can't hear you. In the excerpt published today, it says, Redfield spent the weekend Trump was sick praying. He prayed the president would recover. He prayed that he would emerge from the experience with a newfound appreciation for the seriousness of the threat. And he prayed that Trump would tell Americans they should listen to public health advisors before it was too late. No, really. He prayed and prayed, and God did not hear him. As it says in the excerpt, the virus had begun a violent resurgence. Redfield, Fauci, Birx, and others felt they had limited time to persuade people to behave differently if they were going to avoid a massive wave of death. There were few signs that weekend that Trump would have a change of heart. Yeah, no. How's that for chilling? And we knew what was going on the whole time. We talked about it here. And it kept getting worse and kept getting worse. We've crossed the 600,000 mark. And at least 400,000 of those are directly attributable to the willful, wanton, reckless, grossly negligent conduct of COVID Caligula. And still, the sane part of a nation waits for some degree of accountability on his part. Chilling, says David in South Carolina, Stan. John Aravosis over at Twitter said, Onan, you know, the network that spills its news upon the ground, calls for the execution of tens of thousands of Americans who stole the 2020 election from Trump. Holy shit. Chilling indeed. Malcolm Nance quote tweeted it and said, adopting QAnon mass murder storm talk is a deliberate strategy being played out by Trumpistas. Now they say Democrats are the real insurrectionists who must be held accountable for 11-3 with their lives. It is straight-up Turner Diary stuff. The same talk was seen before January 6th. We ain't out of the woods. We ain't in the clear. They're still plotting. They're still planning. And having seen yesterday that you get a slap on the wrist and 40 hours of community service, or maybe no jail time and no jail time at all, and, oh, God, maybe a $500 fine, how many maggots are out there saying, well, hell, Harriet, next time we're a-going. We got our bear spray laid in. We got our tasers and our lasers and our freedom protectors. Because this time we're going to get it right. And meanwhile, while he has a hard time expressing any kind of common decency, remember the
Happy Father's Day to the losers
comment last Sunday. Nitwit Nero just noticed the building collapse in Surfside, Florida.
My thoughts and prayers are with all of those impacted by the building collapse in Surfside, Florida. Thank you to the incredible first responders and law enforcement for arriving so quickly on the job, as always. We wish Governor Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis and all of those representing the great state of Florida concerning this tragic event good luck and Godspeed. I am with you all the way.
Well, go on down there, dipshit, and throw some paper towels at him. And speaking of Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis, holy crap. You can't get much more fascist than this. According to a report in the Tampa Bay Times, the state of Florida will now require colleges and universities in that state that are taxpayer-funded to perform surveys to find out, quote, the extent to which competing ideas and perspectives are presented in college classrooms and whether or not students and faculty, quote, feel free to express their beliefs and viewpoints And white supremacist adjacent illegitimate governor Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis, who only became governor with the help of real live, no kidding, Nazis and the people who were willing to get in bed with them, said, it used to be thought that a university campus was a place where you'd be exposed to a lot of different ideas. You know, like 2 + 2 = Zorp. Or the alphabet goes A, B, Norblap, K, X, Zig. Yeah. Unfortunately, now the norm is these are more intellectually repressive environments. You have orthodoxies that are promoted, and other viewpoints are shunned or even suppressed, like when Lewis and Clark saved the Alamo. I'm adding some pieces here and there. So this, you know, this is just a way of trying to intimidate state-funded colleges and universities. There's nothing in there about the surveys being optional. So the students are going to have to, and don't think for a minute that people handed this won't think, well, you know, it looks like I'm being monitored. Yeah, sure, it's anonymous. Florida State Senate President Wilton Simpson, and the heartbreak attending the collapse of the building in Surfside is at the forefront of many minds in that state and in the nation right now. And I do not wish to in any wise trivialize it. I am not trivializing it. But maybe instead of worrying about whether or not people can bark and grunt their QAnon fucking talking points, Florida State Senate President Wilton Simpson, Republican from Trilby, might want to focus on things like building codes.
We always hear about the liberal parts of the universitas system, and we don't hear so much of that from the college system.
That was at a Board of Governors meeting. What? And the Speaker of the Florida House, Chris Sproles, a Republican from Palm Harbor, said,
"We ain't got no diversity of thought in our universitas. As the governor said, we are at great risk as a nation and as a state on the lack of intellectual diversity that is on our universitas campuses. We have decided that one ideological standard will win the day, but the thing is we're losing because we're not having real conversations about how Jesus taught man to ride to church, Adam and Eve, you know, on their dinosaurs, right?"
You know, they don't particularly want colleges and universities. They want little indoctrination centers.
"And on the third day, God created the Remington bolt action rifle so that man could fight the dinosaurs and the homosexuals."
Amen.
Yeah, that's what they want. Sure. I mean, it was years ago now that Dr. John wrote in and told us about how the state of Florida was eliminating the social sciences from university curricula. And these things happened. And then it became a wave. And classics have largely disappeared from college campuses. Yeah, because who needs to read that old shit? Right? Oh, and thank you very kindly to Steve in New York. Thank you, Steve, in New York. We have another challenge on the table. It is the Rudy's Been Suspended $20 challenge. Attorney detail report as of 6/24/2021. Rudolph William Giuliani. Business name, Rudolph W. Giuliani, PLLC, of 445 Park Avenue, Floor 18, New York, New York, 10022-2606. Admitted to the bar, June the 25th, 1969, from NYU. Registration status, suspended. Next registration, May 2022. So, yeah, he's in a suspended state, and there's a $20 challenge celebrating that, courtesy of Steve in New York. And so that means there's $35 left on the Summer of Robin challenge and then the Rudy suspended challenge, which could get us down, well, it gets us down below the $1,000 mark. For the moment. So thank you, Steve. Thank you for making that challenge. It just you wait, says Steve, till some fucking right-wing Republican college student turd or the likes of James O'Keefe complains of a professor teaching critical race theory. That's all this is about. That's it. That's all. It's all just a setup because, among other things, the Republican Party, in a memo, is now barking and grunting about how we have to make sure that the critical race theory don't spread in America. We got to destroy critical race theory before we can save, rebuild our country. No, really. It's a real live, no kidding memo. According to Politico today, Representative Jim Banks, a Republican from Tallahassee, of course, chair of the Republican Study Committee, and he recognizes a winning article or a winning issue for ginning up the rubes when he sees one. The Democrat Party has wholly embraced critical race theory and all its conclusions that America is a racist country and our institutions are racist and need to be destroyed from the ground up. This is a revolutionary posture. We are in a culture war. On one side, Republicans are working to renew American patriotism and rebuild our country by attacking the capital of the United States of America. I added that part. On the other, Democrats have embraced and given a platform to a radical element who want to tear America down, except for like the ones that, you know, they tried to, that our side tried to tear down on January the 6th. I mean, we're not going to say the, quiet part out loud. Right. That's all it's about. You're right, Steve. Matt in San Francisco says, suspended state. Appropriate, seeing how that's how Rudy sleeps. Hanging by his heels. That's good stuff. Thank you. Thank you to Mark in Florida. Thank you, Mark. We are now down to $15 to go on the Summer of Robin Challenge. And then the $20 challenge from Steve. And, you know, I saw this video the other day. And I hadn't thought about it in this context, but David in South Carolina, Stan, just brought it to my attention. The USS Gerald Ford was subjected to a test of its ability to withstand a massive explosion. And it was off the Florida coast. If you see the video, it is a huge explosion. And the aircraft carrier passed, I guess, with flying colors. Aircraft carrier, flying colors. See what I did there? But over in Daytona, or near Daytona, it showed up on seismic sensors as a 3.9 magnitude on the Richter scale earthquake. David in South Carolina, Stan, says, not saying this caused the building collapse, but, you know, 3.9 magnitude Richter scale earthquake. Yeah. And it's a fragile place. I mean, God, what's the highest point in Florida? Is it even 200 feet above mean sea level? I don't think so. That's a damn thing to ponder. Building codes, says Lee in New York. Who needs building codes? If your buildings fall down, people won't live there and you go out of business. Why, that sounds like the libertarian approach, Lee. And a COVID USA deaths update. Jeremy in Vermont points out we got about 25,000 more deaths until we eclipse all deaths in the Civil War with real live bullets and cannonballs for 5 years. That includes both the Americans who died and the traitors. Right. Oh. Let's see. Let's pop over and check in on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program. Are you there?
Yeah.
Hey, Reggie, how are you?
Just fine, man. Just fine. I would just like to know why can't the GOP leave the squad alone concerning AOC and Reverend Ilhan Omar?
Because they are great fundraising opportunities. They may not be particularly massive women, but they got backs that can carry a shit ton of fundraising.
Right. And why can't they leave VP Kamala Harris alone when it comes to the new Mexican border?
See my previous answer.
I heard that she snapped back off on a Univision reporter. I guess when he asked her the question about the border, about the New Mexico border. I don't know what she said to him, but she snapped back at him.
Hey, Reggie, I'm having a little bit of a hard time hearing you. You're a little bit muffled. Sure. Can you try to get a little better oriented toward the mic on your phone?
Yeah, I'm talking to you right now, Robin. Hello?
Yeah, that's a little bit better. I think maybe you had your hand partially over the microphone. Just kind of watch where you hold it.
Right. Well,
yeah, I'm trying to figure out, Reggie, and I have been for a while, what it is that anybody going, either President Biden or Vice President Harris going to the border, what is that going to accomplish?
Well, everything or nothing at all. Either everything or nothing at all. What do you think, Robin?
I'm guessing nothing.
Exactly. Me too. Me too, Robin. Me too. I was thinking of the exact same answer. Nothing at all. And what do you?
It's just another meaningless thing for the maggots to flog.
Right.
And in point of fact, there's nothing, you know, the border's going wild. Oh, I'll tell you, the hordes are pouring across the Rio Grande. Bullshit.
Right.
Bullshit.
Right. Right. Do you think this is yet another photo op? I hate to say that.
It's not even a photo op. It's the fact that Greg Abbott down in Texas will grunt and, well, I don't know why that brown woman come down here. She looks like an illegal alien herself.
Right. And she was born in this country.
Yeah. But then again, they accuse her of being a Hindu because she's got Indian parentage. But the fact of the matter is, the dumbasses don't even realize. I mean, you can't get much more Merkin than to be a Southern Baptist, and that's what Kamala Harris is. I mean, that's not, in my book, that's not a selling point for me.
Right.
But there's Southern Baptists, and there's Southern Baptists.
Right. And they attacked Reverend Ilhan Omar for the exact same thing. I mean, Representative Ilhan Omar for the exact same thing, Robin. For being a Muslim American.
Yeah, well, there are certain Republicans who will say out loud, you know, America shouldn't allow none of them Muslims to be a member of the government because they don't love America like good God-fearing Christians do. Well, what about the Jewish people? Well, you know, they might have killed Christ, but it's a Judeo-Christian tradition.
Right. And because they're going after her because she told the truth about America being a country full of white terrorists, white supremacist terrorists, Robin. What do you think about that?
Here's what I think about that, Reggie. It's okay to talk about American history in plain, unvarnished, unfly-blown terms.
Right.
I mean, look, the white supremacy was the official operating system of the United States government up to about the time when, at the very earliest, when President Harry Truman, integrated the military. That was the first tentative step away from white supremacy as the operating system. Never mind capitalism. Never mind democracies or republics or none of that. No, up until that tentative first baby step, the operating system of the United States was one thing, and that one thing was white supremacy.
Right, but it's okay for them to talk about it, but somebody who's from a different country and a different race, they even a different gender, can't.
Yeah, and you're still muffling. I don't know if you got your phone too close to your face or what, but I mean your audio has been better in the past. It's like it's just all I'm getting is like this the lower range of the register of your voice.
Can you hear me now, Robin?
I can better. Yeah, it's some better.
Okay, well, I was saying that it's okay for them to talk about it, but it's not okay for us to talk about it.
Well, that's, you know, because they, because that's color. Because they talk about it in terms, they being the maggots and the Republicans and whatnot, they talk about it in terms of saying, well, you know, I mean, we it ain't never been that way. America's right. Great, and God and Jesus loves us, and they've always loved us, and the slaves were happily singing songs down in the cotton fields and the rice paddies and the indigo fields and the tobacco patches and the hemp farms. Oh, they's just so happy, and they live in this bullshit, the ahistorical fantasy land world that never existed.
Right. But they're going after her, AOC, you know, Kamala Harris, and God knows who else.
And don't for a minute think that there aren't Democrats in Washington and elsewhere who would like to say those things out loud, but they know that they will be absolutely nailed to the cross with a nail gun.
Right.
With advertising back home among the rubes, you know, Representative Schmedrick doesn't love America. How dare Representative Schmedrick say that America has a racist past? Well, it's a goddamn right. Fact, Reggie.
Yeah. Yeah. And they wanted Speaker Nancy Pelosi to clarify on Representative Ilhan Omar's comment. And she refused to do it.
Well, why should she? Yeah, she's not exactly. Responsible for what Ilhan Omar says. And Ilhan Omar is a grown-up American woman,
yes,
who is fully capable of defending what she says, but the problem is the maggots and the maggot media don't want to hear Ilhan Omar explain it because she will own their ass.
Yeah, just like AOC would, right, Robin?
Right.
Just like AOC would.
Don't, no, they don't want anything to do with that, and why would either one of them want to waste any time talking to Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground, or Newsmuck, or Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda? Where's the upside?
There is no upside.
Right.
Unless you're talking about, there's no upside unless you're talking about CNN, CNBC, or MSNBC, but I don't think you trust those. Yeah, we'll see. Do you, Robin?
Oh, it depends. I mean, it's a mixed bag. It depends on who you're talking about.
Right. But let's talk. Yeah, go ahead, Robin.
I mean, AOC, along with Seth Moulton from Massachusetts, was on Morning Joe last week talking about how we move forward. I thought it was a decent conversation, but they steered far away. She did say, and I agree with her, that the infrastructure bill needs to be monumentally bigger. I mean, we're talking, $1.2 trillion, and Casey Hunt, I think it was yesterday, getting her glasses all steamed up and pearl clutching and hand wringing over $1.2 trillion. It's $1.2 trillion over what, 8 years?
Right.
And never mind all the, never mind all the zeros. If you divide, let me haul my calculator up here. I'm no good at this on my own. 1.2 divided by 8 equals 0.15.
Right.
Okay. So $1.2 trillion divided by 8 is what, about $150 billion a year? And that's going to fix the infrastructure of the United States? Where do you start first when all you got to work with is $1.5 billion?
True.
In a nation this big. Yeah. I mean, if it was $10 trillion over 10 years, you might get something done. But this is just a way of saying, yeah, we really don't want to do anything about this.
Well,
the Republicans like America just fine. People are working for shit wages. 20% of children are going to bed hungry every night. It's a Republican goddamn conservative wonderland, isn't it?
Yeah, but what about the educational system?
Well, as far as Republicans are concerned, the dumber people are, the better off they are, because it makes it easier to scare them to death with. Scary words like critical race theory and Antifa and Black Lives Matter. Stupid people, the people who are kept deliberately ignorant are easily manipulated. Yeah. Remember when he was running for president, Reggie, and Nitwit Nero said,
I just love the undereducated and the uneducated. I love him.
He wasn't kidding.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I remember that.
Sure.
But what about the economy? You know, what about the economy?
Well, as look, they don't. The Republicans don't give a damn about any sector of the economy except Wall Street and their investments.
Right. Right. Well, you had you had people like Bernie Sanders going on to The View, and with Meghan McCain saying he's the godfather of the squad, and he's like, no, I'm not. I can't control what the squad does and system. I'm not here to talk about the squad. I'm here to talk about this country, or this planet, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I can't believe she went off. I can't believe she was asking us. She was facing such a stupid ass question like that, or something, or a statement like that.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And you got Tucker Carlson attacking John Lennon because he lives in a mansion. You know.
Well, don't most millionaires live in millionaire houses?
Yeah.
But I guess Tucker Carlson, being a fucking white supremacist, doesn't think people of color should be millionaires.
Exactly. That's what John Lennon said. But it says much more about Tucker Carlson than it says about John Lennon. And that's what John Lennon said. And I saw a clip of it yesterday.
Oh, I saw it too, and I just kind of decided not to. Because, you know, when the media is, you know, and that's... I don't know how he has a job. Tucker Carlson has spends one evening having a shit hemorrhage about Don Lemon, another evening talking about why do we laugh at why do we laugh at Alex Jones?
Yeah, he's an idiot. I mean, could Alex Jones be an idiot? So is Tucker Carlson.
Well, I think Alex Jones is just totally wasted on steroids, but that's purely speculation on my part. But
right, yeah. Why do any of these people have jobs, Robbie?
Because there are people who want them to want him. Because there are people who want them to do exactly what it is they're doing.
Nothing.
No, poison the body politic. Pour poison into the ears of ignorant people.
Right. Aren't there laws against that? Like, especially the FCC or
no, there are no laws against that.
All right.
No, absolutely, positively not.
Yeah, but if any of us said it, there'd be a whole different story, right?
Well, but that would be economic forces brought to bear.
Right. What? There'll be, no merch, no money, no,
right.
Advertisement,
Well, look, every time some alleged liberal says booger on the for-profit media, there's a campaign against them to get them off the air.
Yeah, but if a conservative says it, nothing happens, right? Right, Rob?
Well, I mean, you can look. It got to where Rush had almost no advertisers. The same thing happened with Bill O'Reilly. O'Reilly only got chased off the air because Fox had to start paying horse-gagging loads of money for the women that he had sexually harassed. And then the only thing that got rid of Rush Limbaugh was mortality. He was broadcasting right up to the bitter end, pouring poison into the ears of America right up to the bitter end.
Right. And they got rid of Lee Dobbs, too. They got rid of Lee Dobbs, too.
Right. Well, again, when he cost them money.
Right.
Don't offend the money.
Right. But didn't CNN suspend and now he brought back Jeffrey to them? What do you feel about that, Rob?
Oh well, it's all theater, Reggie. I would advise you not to spend nearly as much time as maybe you do paying attention to what happens on the TV box.
Right. True. Right. That's true. That is. I watch clips of this stuff. It's on the internet each and every single day.
Yeah. Well, Reggie, I'm gonna run on and clear some space for another caller. Somebody was trying to beep in just a minute ago, and we will talk soon. Okay.
Okay, but like you said, I mean, Reverend Ilhan, I mean, Representative Ilhan Omar said one thing: they go ape and that get nuts and insane and psychotic, crazy. But if somebody on this side says something, nothing happens. It's like silence and crickets, right, Robin?
Sure. Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Reggie, you have yourself a good evening, and be careful in the heat, you hear?
Yeah, you keep yourself cool too, Robin.
I'm trying. It hadn't been so bad. It hadn't been too bad so far. It's 81 degrees here in the studio.
Yeah, but it's less humid around. It's less humid around here too, Robin.
Oh my.
It's less humid around here. Right.
All right, you take care, Reggie. We'll talk soon, you hear?
You do too, Robin.
All right.
Okay, Robin.
Bye now.
All right.
My buddy Reggie calling from Decatur. The Horn Ad Hoc Research Department swung into immediate action. The highest point in Florida, Lee in New York says, you can't get above there in Florida, at 345 feet above mean sea level. And I don't understand why it is that they think sea level's so mean. I kind of enjoy going to the beach. Britton Hill is Florida's highest natural point and the lowest high point in the United States. It's in Walton County, Florida, signed one of your researchers, Lee in Florida. Jeremy found something similar. The highest point in Florida, it's where and whenever Mike Methhead Lindell shows up. Meanwhile, Steve in New York says the highest spot in Florida is Matt Gaetz's forehead. It just gates better. Yeah. He got absolutely brutalized, Matt Gaetz did, on Twitter. Somebody said, the only war you fought is against the age of consent. Dirty little perv. Yeah. By the way, the Summer of Robin Challenge has been met, as has the Rudy Suspended Challenge. And we've got some to go after that. Let's see, that's so that means we're down to, oh God, where were we? Quick ciphering. We were at 10:58:34 to begin. No, 11:58:34 to begin. And so we're down by 11:38. That's Joey and Giraffe. No. 1118, we went down to 1100. Now we're down to 900. And then we are down to $835 to catch up with this week. Thank you. Thank you so much. And, of course, he was... Rudy Giuliani was suspended from practicing law, you know, because of the bilious bullshit that he peddled over the 2020 election. Which means that they've taken him away from Nitwit Nero. But he'll continue to practice without a license. And thank you, Jude, in the Great Northwest. You can read the court's ruling over at CNN if you have the desire so to do. So, if we could raise another $235, we would be fully funded for Tuesday and just have yesterday and today to deal with tomorrow. So every step we take is a positive step toward, because, you know, we're running out of June now. We've only got, what, 3 days in June next week, the 28th, 29th, and 30th. So hopefully we will finish to the good. It would be most helpful. Back over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
I don't even know where to begin.
Hi, darling.
I have no idea where to begin. And hi, and you know, my apologies You brought so many fantastic topics, and my apologies. I did not mean to interrupt Reggie. I have to shut my the stream off for me to, when I call you, so that I don't get the feedback should you pick up. And I didn't know that Reggie was talking to you at that time, because I had shut the your stream off, you know, just before he called in. So, and I have to be absolutely, you know, I have to apologize, because I'm absolutely insane to come on the heels and to be the follow up act to both Paul from Parts Unknown and Reggie with the good soul. But I'm going to do my best. So, I'm hearing that, okay, Nitwit Nero, what you have told us is that essentially Nitwit Nero was so incapacitated that in all honesty, Vice President Mike Pence should have been acting president for that time that he was at, for the time that Nitwit Nero was, you know, drugged up and doped out at Bethesda.
Yes.
Is that what I'm hearing? Okay. And then, okay. So, and yet, again, whoever, you know, his administration, his kids, that horrible Ivanka and her husband and all of the grifters around him kept the American people in the dark, that we were basically leaderless. We've been leaderless anyway for the 4 years he was there, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, but it begs a question, Darlene. Who was running the country?
Precisely. Who was running the country? And, you know, you said he had a 90%, the report is that that he had a 90% oxygen loss?
Below.
Is that what I'm hearing?
Below.
So there had to have been some kind of intervention, because wouldn't that be enough to cause some brain damage?
I'm not competent to answer that question. I think if it stayed down there for a good long while, yeah, but that's me guessing.
But he's already brain damaged. We know that. But I'm being facetious here. But clearly, there was massive intervention to save this motherfucker, which again proves that there is no God. There is no God, because when you look at his avarice and then and the 600,000 and counting who have died because of his dereliction of duty, quote unquote, here he is getting the treatment of a king, and he is not worth a fleck on a piece of shit. And it's like, again, there is no God, because there should have been, you know, if there was a God and lightning strikes and all that stuff, I'm not going to say anymore, you know.
Let me be just a little bit of a contrarian here, if I may.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. What the hell?
your show.
No,
sure,
no, I mean, I think about this stuff when I catch myself thinking the same things that you just gave voice to. Now that we have our 2020 hindsight glasses on, and we know what happened on January the 6th, can you imagine what would have happened in this country if he had shuffled off this mortal coil? The maggots would have gone gun-toting, bear-spraying, bullshit, batshit crazy.
Well, at the time all of this was going on, I was saying, like everybody else, on our side, you know, the intelligent, brilliant, truly patriotic side, we were saying, hey, I hope he survives. Want to survive. Because we're all hoping that one day we're going to see him in an orange jumpsuit to match the color of his skin doing a purple work. Okay? We want to see him pay for his crimes. Okay? But it's like, it begs the question, and I have not had the opportunity to read the full article yet. Okay? But I don't know if you caught the headline about Adam Schiff. I think it was in the Washington Post. I saved the article. I have not had a chance to read it. But the article, I don't know if it was a headline or a subheadline, that Adam Schiff is trying to make the executive branch, the presidency, Trump-proof to prevent the kinds of things that we saw from a Donald Trump. And that the disturbing part of the headline is that the Biden administration is not keen on it. And Adam Schiff had said something along the lines of, you know, he's a little kind of surprised that they're not coming on board with his suggestions and his ideas. But he's going to continue to keep the dialogue open. So when we hear about this kind of a report, okay, and we hear about what Adam Schiff is saying, and that he's saying that there's pushback from the Biden administration about making it Trump-proof, and in other words, putting in safeguards, you know, so that we don't have a president or an executive branch that is ignoring subpoenas from Congress. And that we don't have a president who is certifiably insane and there's nothing we could do about it. Okay, because Nancy was talking about a 25th Amendment style congressional commission. That I haven't heard her talk about that lately.
Nor have I, but we did have noted progressive purist Kyle Kulinski talking to Pink Shrek the other day. I'm sure you caught that clip. I don't know what Biden's, and maybe the reason, you know, just because she's not out there talking about it out loud doesn't mean it isn't being worked in the background. Now, as Kyle Kulinski said, I'm talking out my ass. But, you know, once it's been introduced. Once it's been introduced, it takes on a life of its own, and it's either co-sponsored and it gets to the floor, or it just quietly waits in the background. Jamie Raskin introduced it, you may recall, and he had introduced it in a previous Congress, too.
Well, they need to do it again, because you and I both are pretty confident that Joe Biden's got it with the ball. Okay?
Yeah. But, the maggots will say, yeah, by God, we do need that, because, you know, Joe Biden, he's crazy. I mean, I can't get my head around how they watched Nitwit Nero behave like a dementia patient for 4 years, but Joe Biden stutters, like we all know, and all of a sudden, obviously he's incompetent. But just to return to Trump for a minute, Darlene, I find it not comforting, but at least. Well, is gratifying the right word? We were talking about this stuff. How many 25th Amendment conversations did we have between January 2017 and January 2021? Because I'm pretty sure there were a bunch.
Well, you and I had one, and we went really in depth with it and talked about that one particular clause.
Yeah.
Congress may by law provide. Okay, and you know, I think Nancy finally picked up on it, but she's not moving on it. We need them to move on it again. Quite frankly, we know, you know, unless we're lucky enough to somehow stop Republicans from stealing the House and the Senate again. this may be the optimum time to put that commission in. But of course, you know what? It's like, what would the, you know, and that's part of the problem. What would the, what would a Republican House and Senate do with a commission like that if there was a Democratic president? You know, I guess we can't. I don't know if there's any way we can win on this. I mean, you know, looking at today with the infrastructure deal, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, when I looked at all those individuals coming out of the White House portico there with Joe Biden, you know, I'm sorry, I viewed pretty much all of them as Republicans. Yeah, and as and quite frankly, as a little side note, as a woman with a disability, I'm sorry, I cannot help but laugh at Kirsten Sinema. I just couldn't help but laugh at her when whatever she did to her foot. I know that's bad, but it's just, I just thought it was hilarious. I'm sorry, I just thought it was hilarious, and I could see the side eye that what's his name was giving her. Mitt Romney, looking at her, you know, she's in her bright pink thing and striped stuff and whatever. I looked at that and I'm like, I don't trust this deal, whatever's coming out of it. And especially the marker for me, the critical person was Susan Collins. Or the, I love the way you say it. Go ahead.
Susan Collins!
Was like literally jumping with glee over it, which means AOC is correct. It's too little.
And we're rapidly approaching too late.
Too late. That goes without saying. It goes without saying that it's too late. Okay. But it's too little. The amount is going to be subpar. I'm shocked. You know, Biden's probably reading the tea leaves and saying, I got to give in on this one. But you and I know AOC is right. This is going to be a half-assed infrastructure, you know, upgrade. It's going to be half-assed. I mean, Bernie was talking about $6 trillion. He was putting forth, he said it should be $6 trillion. And my guess is that he's probably closer to the correct number because the infrastructure has been neglected for so long. Now, so, you know, I look at this and I'm like, again, Democrats are not, they're knuckling under. And Republicans still own them. And will continue to own them, even when they're in the minority, and even if they quote unquote have a majority in either, you know, in both houses or certainly the Senate, we know they're representing far less Americans.
Oh yeah.
And so you have a situation, I think it was Robert Reich who said, "This makes no sense. 68% of Americans support a really robust." Oh, maybe it was the filibuster he was talking about. I can't remember if it was the filibuster or if it was the infrastructure plan. But I am very disappointed, and maybe he's spoken out. I don't know if he's spoken out yet. But I think Biden fucked up. I think he fucked up big time today by not saying something, at least giving a few words, about what happened in Florida with the collapse of that building. I thought it was in Miami, but you said it was at Seaside?
Surfside.
Or something?
It's not that far from Miami.
Surfside?
Maybe that's why Nitwit Nero actually put out a press statement saying, "Oh, my sympathies go out to all the people."
Oh, absolutely. No, absolutely. That's why I was going to say Nitwit Nero beat him to the punch. Because you know, Biden should have stated, he should have said something at that impromptu press conference coming out of the portico on the infrastructure bill, because it's clearly related because a reporter asked him. And he said, well, you know, he goes, I, you know, the, I'm on top of it or something. I'm going to speak about that later. And they're all smiling and laughing and smiling. I said, you fucking kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me? And the last thing that I saw about Biden is there's some other thing. He's giving remarks somewhere else. I don't know if it's in North Carolina or wherever he is right now. But he could have said, look, I'm going to speak on this a bit more in depth. But what happened there is a horrible tragedy. Our hearts go out to all of those that have potentially lost loved ones. This is heartbreaking, and we're on top of it, and I'm going to speak about it more in depth as we learn more. You know, and clearly there may be an infrastructure issue involved here. That this is why this bill is so important. But he didn't. He just kind of dismissed it, and I'm feeling I just did not feel as though he gave it the proper and appropriate empathy that was due. He had an opportunity, and he fucking blew it, and I haven't heard him say anything. What happened in Florida is horrific. The little boy that they found there, his little arm was hanging out there in the rubble. They were able to unearth him and take care of him. He said, my mommy was in there. My mommy somewhere. My mommy was with me. She's probably dead.
Oh, God.
So I think he, you know, and they're saying what? The numbers keep changing. I saw 99 people are missing. 89 people are missing. This is an outrage. What happened there is an outrage. And they better be looking at a lot of the buildings there.
Well,
they better
be looking
at the structural integrity.
And what David sent along about, did you see the video of that massive explosion test with the Gerald Ford?
Oh, I was going to bring that up. Holy shit. Did I see that? Can you believe that? Did you see that?
Yeah, I did. I did. And the fact that it registered 3.9 on the Richter scale in Daytona.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so could that have been connected?
Right. And that damned well needs to be investigated.
Yeah, who made that correlation that you just mentioned?
David in South Carolina, Stan, pointed it out to me.
Yeah, David. Fucking brilliant, David. I didn't even make the correlation. I'm usually good at making those kind of really weird, disparate, you know, connections. But he's right. Because, you know, when you watch that video, and I encourage horn listeners to watch that, because they had a lot of still photos and stuff, but that first, the one that they did, you see this thing floating, and you hear the woman counting down, and it looked like the ship was further away for this big one, and I think, I don't know, was there just one, or there were multiple?
No, there was just one. The video I saw, there was just one.
Just one?
Yeah, I think what the view of it that is shot from the from the superstructure of the ship,
chopper,
is done. No, I think it's done with a wide angle lens, and
well,
so it looks
one
further
looked
away.
Like somebody was in the air. It looked like there was somebody in a chopper, and or something, and everything shook, and it was like so shocking because I don't know if the particular device was floating. Or if that was the aircraft carrier, because basically there was a device that was floating, and that seemed to, that's what I thought exploded, and I thought the aircraft carrier was further away. I thought they did multiple detonations, but maybe I'm wrong, but that one that they showed was unbelievable, and yes, it did say that it caused an earthquake, a minor earthquake, a seismic
event,
reaction, or a seismic event, and it's just like, holy crap. So, yeah, could that have, you know, that's a brilliant point.
Yeah, and I mean, how many massive sinkholes open up in Florida every year? It is not, hey, this would be a great moment to get Terry on. Florida ain't exactly geologically stable.
And those sinkholes are creepy. They're creepy as hell. They look like funnels that go to nowhere. There was one that was enormous. You look at the ones, and again, it's all climate change related, okay? Which, again, we cannot look at infrastructure without looking at the climate problem, which is why the bill needs to be massive. There has to be a connection to correct this, because, you know, think about those weird sinkholes in Siberia.
Yeah,
you probably seen those.
Yeah,
and they keep expanding. I mean, those things are really freaky.
As that thaws, it releases those massive bubbles of methane. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they keep it, and it's almost like we're witnessing, because they're so deep. I'm sorry, Mia's, I'm out on the back deck, and
she's fine. She's awesome.
She's cute. She's cute. It almost looks like we're witnessing like such a fissure or separation. It's almost like a continental divide. These things are so deep, and again they continue to expand. So it's like, and trees get sucked in and everything else, and they're expanding at very rapid rates. It's not like it's, you know, a few inches a year. I think it's several feet a year. So, you know, to me, you know, I'm assuming that apartment building was a privately owned building. I don't know if those kinds of things are part of the infrastructure plan. They should be.
Well, yeah, there's a larger consideration here, Darlene, and you know, I'm sure that in some of the finer research departments in universities in Florida, at least until these stupid surveys start going out, I'm sure they're looking at the ability of Florida to support the massive population coming into it. I mean, Florida in the early part of the 20th century was still a relatively non-populous area. And up into, and maybe you still see them down there, people running around with bumper stickers on their car that say Florida native, because they're so thoroughly outnumbered. Mm-hmm. But with the with the advent of one thing, air conditioning, Florida becomes a population transfer juggernaut. But I think Florida has already passed the point of unsustainability. And if you do, you recall back when the state of Florida banned its own scientists from even talking about sea level rise, because these damn fool Republicans, we can't talk about that, and we can't talk about the people of the thousand, talk about the fact that we can't support 1,000 people a day moving to Florida. That'd be bad for the economy, and you want to shake them, Darlene, and say, dumbass, do you not understand? No Florida, no Florida economy, because that's where they're going. And something I was talking about years ago, how do you begin to talk about, or how do you begin to even conceive of, the massive amount of human migration that's going to take place when the water really does start to rise? And they're not going to be able to build a great big beautiful wall around Florida in the water to keep the tides out. Water don't work that way.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, they're already having problems, I think, in some of the lower lying areas.
Yeah.
I think there's already been massive flooding. They're already having problems. And, you know, you're also talking about a large percentage of that population is elderly with special needs. I don't want to say special needs. Let me just say they have unique needs. It's not necessarily easy to relocate. Necessarily, I don't want to be ageist, but we're talking about, it's not like a young person that can easily just kind of pick up and maybe surf, you know, couch surf for
right.
a while, you know what I mean? It is very concerning. I mean, I personally, and I apologize for horn listeners, you know, like there's a Crazy Jerry and others that live there.
Oh, Scary, yeah, Scary Jerry.
I'm not Scary Jerry. Sorry, you're not Crazy Jerry, you're just Scary. Scary Jerry and others. I've never been a fan of Florida. Like, when I went there years and years ago, I really felt myself at sea level. I come from the mountains. You know what I mean? I live in the mountains. I have been a mountain girl. And when I got down in Florida, I'm like, ooh, God. Where are the mountains?
There's something there's something comforting about having mountains around you. And I get down in flatland and it's almost like it's like vertigo. It's like vertigo.
I've had vertigo. It's not as bad as vertigo, but I know what you mean. It's like, it's disconcerting. It's like, I don't feel right. I feel like it in my gut. I feel like I'm off center. I feel like something isn't right. It just doesn't feel right. And it's the whole time that I was there, even though I loved it, it was gorgeous. I had a lot of fun there. I couldn't get past this weird, it's just really uncomfortable feeling. And it's like, you know, if the panhandle is going to submerge, we're fucked. This is a serious, serious problem. And again, I see the infrastructure package as the infrastructure bill. I see it linked to the Green New Deal. And the fact that you had Susan Collins giddy as a schoolgirl about it, you know, it's a subpar plan.
If Susan Collins is happy about it, you know it sucks.
It sucks. It absolutely sucks. And I feel that is by design. And I'm sorry. What is going on with that bitch? Does she have Parkinson's or something?
I don't know. I wonder if I should stop doing the voice.
I mean, the head that shakes like that, you know, that's not an easy disease to have. That really impacts your life. She has some kind of a nerve disorder. And it's not like I've noticed a touch of it in my Senator Blumenthal. He's not as bad as her. So I don't know if she has Parkinson's or whatever it is. You know, clearly she's still capable. She's still, you know, doing her thing. But, you know, the senator's term is extremely long. You know, 6 years, and there ain't no way this woman is younger than me, and she got her hair, my hair, I'll let my hair grow gray because I think it's pretty. She's dyeing her hair pretty much on a daily basis. Okay, she is not a spring chicken, which is
typical. Wait, dyeing her hair on a daily basis, darling? Wouldn't her hair fall out? I mean, I don't know that much.
I'm being a jerk, but I'm a jerkette, but I'm having fun. I'm just having fun with it.
I understand.
But you know, you understand she's dyeing her hair.
Yeah.
She's not a young woman. But bottom line is she's not, you know, for her hair to be like that and with no streaks of gray. Okay. She's dyeing her hair. And that's okay. That's fine. It's fine if women want to do that. That's okay. Okay. But she's trying to give off the illusion that she's youthful. And I wonder about her health. And again, she's somebody that always tries to, you know, wiggle her butt in there and come back with a subpar counterplan to anything that Democrats propose.
That's the part that baffles me. Maine is New England's answer to West Virginia. It would benefit from the Biden plan as it was originally presented. Maine would benefit monumentally, and that's what makes sorting out a Joe Manchin or a Susan Collins so goddamn difficult. It doesn't make any sense. It's like you're obstructing things that are great, going to be great for your state. It's going to be good for business in your state. It's going to be good for rank and file, workaday Mainers and West Virginians, right. and you're standing right in the way. What the hell are you thinking?
Right, and I just, again, maybe it's that inside the beltway thing where there's something more nefarious with her.
I think it's that lobbyist thing. You know, oh, it'll kill business. Well, you know, how's business?
I think it's nefarious on her part. I don't trust her. And, you know, she was called out. There were her campaign was called out. There was another headline, another one I have to read, that came out that her campaign had done some serious shenanigans. And that's no surprise to my friend who now is in Canada, lives in Maine, and who had warned me and said, you know, her campaign, they're going to do sleazy, underhanded things to get her reelected. They always do. And she lived in Maine for several years. So, you know, she's not, it's not beyond her to do sleazy things. And, of course, she tried to, you know, separate herself or divest herself from what the campaign did. But I don't think anything that happened there was without her knowledge. I don't trust her. I don't trust her. I think she is a hardcore Republican who can't stand to see Democrats win on anything. And that is why it was because of her. But, of course, Obama fucked up and he bought into it in order to make nice. But she was the reason that we had such a slow recovery in the aftermath of 2008. Okay, because
I think you're absolutely right.
No, I know I'm right because Joe Biden was in the room for those negotiations, and President Obama agreed to her plan, and that's why Obama came out with Biden came out with a very generous rescue plan. Because he saw he knew what she had done. And remember when he met with her? He met with her prior to the rescue plan coming out to entertain her. You know, basically there, sitting there chatting and stuff. And of course, what did she propose? A much weaker Milky Toast plan. And he thanked her and listened and everything else. And he said, nope, we're going with my plan. And he already... He's been on that conveyor belt before.
You got an amen from Tom in sunny San Rafael. Subject line, Susan Collins. Her and Senator Thurman, Weinstein both. Ugh.
Weinstein? Who?
I think he meant Feinstein. Di-Fi.
Oh, Feinstein. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, she's got to go, too. You know, she's getting more, you know, and it's sad. It is sad. But, you know,
But it's the Senate, Darlene, that has a history of, you know,
Democratic.
when we get to the point where we've got, like, anti-grav stretchers that can just sort of hover into the well of the Senate, there will be senators hovering on anti-grav stretchers, Futurama, their head in a jar will come in and vote to fuck America. I mean, it occurred to me when you were talking about how few Americans are represented by, you know, Republican senators. What does it say? Yeah. And I'll bet you this is true. What does it say about the Senate of the United States that there's more actual representation in the Chinese Parliament or the Russian Duma than there is in the Senate of the United States? There was a statistic way back. We're talking about maybe the 80s, I remember, that said it was easier to remove a member of the Soviet Politburo than it is to remove a sitting incumbent United States senator, you know, from either party.
No, I believe it. I believe it. Yet, you know, the Republicans will be the first to scream, communism!
And by the way, Matt in San Francisco just sent a note. Subject line, infrastructure. It's not just Florida that should be worrying. San Francisco is destined to be underwater. We're in the midst of another super long drought. So we're running out of water, the sea level's rising, but we haven't even broken ground to build desalinization plants in order to have the state remain sustainable for various life forms. Don't even get me started about not having built a new bridge over the course of my entire life. Let's just keep packing the people in, not build any new roads or bridges, and don't worry about water. I mean, who needs water anyway? It's not like we're made up of water or nothing. Humanity is Earth's virus, and Mother Earth bats last. I think Matt's in a bit of a cynical mood this afternoon.
Yeah, but he's no.
But he is right.
I've also thought that too. He's 100% correct, and I don't think he means cynical as in it's in something in it for him. It's cynical as in frustrated and
yeah. We're not impressive.
Aggravated.
You know, the Republicans like the status quo. The Republicans like stasis. You know, the law of inertia says bodies at rest tend to remain at rest. And bodies in motion tend to remain in motion until acted upon by an equal and opposite force. I'm probably getting all of that wrong. But bodies at rest tend to remain at rest. And Republicans like resting. They are the leisure party. And so we got San Francisco. We got Florida. My God, you know, Connecticut, please, you know, sea level rise. But then consider... And all these things sort of stay with me as I absorb them over the years. The aquifer underneath Kansas that has been tapped relentlessly for over 100 years to make a prairie that isn't supposed to be agriculturally intensive. And they've tapped out the aquifer. It's almost all gone. And rain won't get the job done in terms of feeding a country. Or what we were talking about with almonds the other night in California.
Yeah. Yes.
A gallon of water for a freaking almond?
For one.
One.
That's crazy.
One.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's going to kind of affect the almonds, which is delightful, that Paul does. All from parts unknown, because he's a very conscientious individual. But we can't even really count on the stability of our weather, to bring rain when we expect. We had a drought here in Connecticut a few years ago, and we're sort of teetering on that same precipice this year. Although we've been getting major rainstorms
this summer here has been bizarre. This time last year, it was swelteringly hot and nobody could go anywhere. This year we're out and about and we're experiencing record cool temperatures for this time of year. And those fluctuations are predicted by climate change theory. And by the way, Ron and Raleigh just sent a note and said, well, this will make you eat dirt and run rabbits. And it's a headline from January of this year. Dianne Feinstein has filed initial paperwork to run again in 2024 when she will be 91 years old. If she wins in 24 and serves out her full term, she will then be 97 years old in 2027. I think my ciphering's good there. And by the way, I have to send out huge thanks, Darlene.
Wow.
I got to take a moment to send out huge, huge, gigantic, mondo thanks to Mark. Thank you, Mark. Mark just wiped out an entire day's fundraising.
Thank you,
Mark. So we're down to only $535 to go to come even with the week. So that means that's today and a little bit of yesterday. Monday's done, Tuesday's done. We got some of yesterday done, and all we got is today. So thank you, Mark. That is so tremendous. I cannot begin to express how important that is. Because bills are going to get paid. Hallelujah. You know, I'm not running off to the French Riviera. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And I wanted to point something out when we talk about somebody like Dianne Feinstein. By the way, Ralph says, "Wow, thanks, Mark," and the whole community thanks you, Mark. This is Do you think when you're 91 years old or you're 90 years old? No, okay, so 24. So she's 88. Do you think when you get to that point and you've wrapped up your entire being in being a senator, there's just there's no meaning left to your life unless you've got senator in front of your name? I mean, is that it, that her life will just be devoid of meaning if she's not the senior senator from California anymore? Or is she holding out to set a record? Does she want to be there longer than Strom Thurmond? Does she want to be the longest serving woman ever to serve in the United States Senate? At this point, at that point, I mean, is this just a, you know, is this just that Cal Ripken thing of trying to wanting to pass Lou Gehrig? Because, I mean, what...
That was my first...
What good is she doing?
I think it's both. I think it's both. I think, and probably a third point of power, you know, having that power. But my first inclination is what you said, that she's trying to be Strom Thurmond as one of the oldest, so, you know, members. I also think that it is maybe a way to, in her mind, maybe cheat death. You know, I mean, you've heard the stories of people that retire and then they die because, you know, their career, their life was work, and then they retire and waste away. And maybe she's attempting to hold that at bay, too. And then there's the whole idea of power, you know, that she's become quite accustomed to.
Well, I mean, if the California legislature passed on... If the California legislature passed a law and Gavin Newsom signed it and they changed the name of the state to Califinestinia, would that be enough?
I don't think so. I think she'd still run. I think that would give her all the more impetus to run. I think it's setting a record. I think it's all of those things. I think it's all of those things. I mean, look, again, my mind goes back to her behavior towards the children, which I know you, the children that came to talk to her, about climate change, of all things. And I know you lay blame at the feet of both the kids and the adult chaperones and her, but I put her more at blame. I do. I put her more at blame because she's the one in the position of power. She had a bunch of kids in front of her. She claims to be a grandmother, and hate to have her as a grandmother, I tell you. And it's just like, I think by her behavior and her repentant isn't the word I'm looking for, but just, what is that word? When you don't, a non-introspection about what happened there. I mean, maybe she was introspective, but I didn't see her issue a statement, say, well, I could have handled that better. I don't know if she's ever issued a statement where she said, you know, that showed some introspection. Dianne Feinstein lacks introspection. Okay, I'm just going to come out and say it. She lacks introspection. I've never heard, have you ever heard her apologize for it? I mean, even when, even when they called her out for her falling all over Lindsey Graham cracker during the horrible judiciary hearings, the confirmation hearings, or whatever they were, I don't think she ever really apologized and said, yeah, you know, I screwed up. She just, you know, quietly said, I'm step down from the committee or whatever.
Well, wealth will do that to you. I don't have to apologize. I'm rich.
Well, and again, you know, she did, her husband, and then there was the other one there, Loeffler, and then one of the other ones. So two Republicans and her, a Democrat, essentially grew their wealth, capitalized on the pre-knowledge about the pandemic. And right, they pulled certain assets out of the stock market just in time, or invested in other things just in time, when the rest of us was just, you know, the rest of us rubes were just learning about the pandemic, right? None of them were ever called to task on that. She was one of them. Oh, it was her husband. It wasn't her. Bullshit. You're married. You benefit from it. Now, I'm not saying that she's responsible for her husband's act, but it's not a good, it's not, the optics aren't good, and clearly her husband's wealth is her wealth. Whatever he acquires, she acquires.
Right, and you know, Matt in San Francisco just addressed that. He said, look, it's hard for me to speak about Dianne Feinstein. She will always be etched in my mind as she stood outside in the rotunda of City Hall to announce to the city that Harvey Milk and Mayor Moscone had been shot and killed. Having said that, I think she remains there in order to continue to steer that defense spending towards her husband and keep rolling up that bank account ticker. I thank her for what she has done, and I respectfully request that she exit stage left post haste. And see the
and that just shows her selfishness.
Yeah, and that is I think that is that's kind and generous and decent on Matt's part, and it's probably the sense of a whole hell of a lot of Californians, especially Democrats and especially progressive Democrats. But there's a problem that attaches to that much wealth and that much power, and it happens here too. Because I suspect because of the power that she wields, and she doesn't just wield it broadly, she wields it downstream so that she's probably created a political legacy so that, you know, if you get on Dianne Feinstein's shit list, you're going to be on somebody else's shit list, even if she shuffles off this mortal coil. The same thing with Joe Manchin. Once you're on Joe's shit list, you are on Joe's shit list forever. It ain't like purgatory, and you can get prayed out. You're staying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm sure. I'm sure there's something quite addictive about being in government in that way. You know, as a senator or a representative, there are a lot of perks and amenities that come with that. And I think you have to be a very extraordinary kind of person to remember who you're representing, where you came from. And those individuals can seem rather few and far between. They are there. You know, you've got Bernie Sanders, who's been relentless all of his career and fighting for working people's rights. AOC, who I can never see that young woman ever turning away from her. She's so good. And, I mean, she's there to help people. She was even there to help people in Texas, you know, when they had a horrible storm. There are Blumenthal. I think Blumenthal's got a good heart. Chris Murphy, you can be a snob, you know, but he does seem to, at times, he does, for the most part, come down. He pretty much is, he's pretty good in terms of his positions on things. Jim Himes is really good. Garcia, I think she's from Texas as well. And Sheila Jackson Lee and others, they are there, but the Dianne Feinsteins, the Susan Collinses, I don't know if it's more, you mentioned cynical, okay, the word cynical in the different light that we talk about cynical, and just their own. I think it's there for their own egos. And I'm sure it's addictive. It's really cool. When you said it, I thought it was great to be a senator. I mean, really cool. And walk through those hallowed halls and the Capitol building and be part of that, culture, is probably quite addictive. And the wealth that it generates for you is addictive. It's pretty much a 100% kind of thing.
Yeah, what's the old saying?
Government.
What's the old saying? Power is the ultimate aphrodisiac.
Yeah.
I mean, not to become coarse or gross, but there's a reason that obese, old, rich, powerful men wind up getting to have sex with beautiful young women who otherwise would not look twice at them. And I hate myself for saying that because it feels sexist and it feels...
No, but it's true.
Oh, okay, so thank you. I mean, I like I said, I don't like saying it.
No, it's true. No, it's true. I mean, okay. I mean, my God. Newt Gingrich, Harvey Weinstein. And look, and I'm not saying if these guys weren't, like, decent guys, I'm sure Harvey Weinstein, I'm sure he was very charming. Ugly as fuck. But if he was actually a halfway decent person, he probably would have had the money he would have had. So he probably wouldn't have. I don't, you know, but yeah, I don't think you can separate the two. I think, you know, when you look at some of these people and Trump, he's ghastly as fuck. Ugly. I mean, he was a bit better looking when he was younger, but he was never I've never considered him a very handsome man.
No, he's got a mouth like a cat's ass. Sorry, exactly. I mean, you know,
exactly.
Reality spoken here.
Right, it's reality, and of course, these are the same types that rape, sexually assault women and young girls, right?
Right.
You know, they're all... So, you know, that power, that money, it brings quite a bit to them that they might not otherwise get, you know, if, say, they were a working man who's really trying to, you know, working hard every day, honestly, and trying to pave his way in this difficult economy and country, because as you said, this is a brutal country, and it is. So, anyway, there you go.
And that I guess that's a good ending point for us this evening.
Yeah.
And I'm still making. Yeah. We made up a little bit of extra time last night for what I missed on Tuesday. We've made up a little bit of extra time tonight for what I missed on Tuesday. Maybe we'll fill in the entire gap. Darlene, I've enjoyed the conversation immensely, and I've got I always enjoy our conversations. What are we talking about?
Likewise, we have some great ones. Yeah.
And I've got thanks to send.
I jump all over the map, but I appreciate you.
Oh, but I love following where you go. It's because you never go anywhere boring. And it's always intriguing,
no,
and it's always thought provoking. Yeah, it is. It's all connected.
It's all connected.
Tom Robbins.
Everything is connected.
Yeah, Tom Robbins in Still Life with Woodpecker back in the late 70s or early 80s made a blanket statement. Everything is part of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is everything, and everything is part of it. And I got thanks to send out to Will in Chicago. Will took us down even further. We're down to only 485 to go to come up even, so that means 785 for tomorrow, which is not nearly as terrifying a Friday on the Front Porch Community Made Miracle, and gives me considerable hope for the end of June. Because there's among other things, I've got a health insurance premium to pay, and I get terrified every month over
that.
And
that's a
thing.
Big one.
Yeah, it's a whack.
Yeah, and you shouldn't be paying. Yeah. And you shouldn't be paying what you're paying. That's outrageous. It's outrageous. And, it's you know, and it's shocking. Oh, my God, we're already at the end of June, and it's chilly out. I'm cold.
Yeah.
Sitting on the back deck. It's chilly.
Yeah, and it's going to be that way.
And we got that. Do we have some big-ass glacier thing that separated down in, was it Antarctic?
Yeah,
Antarctic?
The biggest, I think it was the biggest chunk, the biggest chunk of ice ever to calve off the Antarctic mainland, you know, ever.
Yeah, three times the size of Manhattan, and that's floating around out there somewhere.
Yeah, we dropped a big hunk. Yeah, we dropped a
belt, actually.
Yeah, we dropped a big hunk of ice in our global cocktail.
Yeah, so we got problems. We got problems.
We got problems in River City, Darlene.
We do. But, you know, my heart goes out to those poor, innocent individuals in that condo, that high-rise complex in Florida. I hope that they can save more people in the rubble there. But it just simply does not sound good. And Biden needs to say something fast and quickly about this because, this is horrendous. It, you know, when I saw those pictures, what did it remind you of?
Oh, 9/11.
Yes or no?
Oklahoma City.
Yeah. It reminded me, oddly enough,
Robert in Australia wrote in and said, looking at the images of the Florida building collapse, I was reminded of the collapse of the Ronan Point high-rise back in 1968 in Australia. A gas explosion resulted in the progressive collapse of an entire corner of the tower block, which killed 4 people and injured 17 other residents. The explosion blew out the load-bearing flank walls, which had been supporting the 4 flats directly above, lifting the ceiling and floor slab. This resulted in a house of cards progressive collapse, as the floors above were then unsupported. The entire corner of the building, from the top floor to the bottom of the floor, then proceeded to collapse. The blame for the collapse was placed on poor design and construction. And that's always available. I don't care if you're building a freaking doghouse in Florida. There's some contractor and some inspector out there that, if you are to believe veteran journalists like Carl Hyacin, are always on the take. To read him. It was just filthy. And frankly,
I believe it.
If I saw the photograph online. I hope they're getting the structural engineers in around the other buildings, because that might not be a single building fail. Yep. And Robert also pointed out Sydney's Opal Tower was part of the redevelopment of the Sydney Olympic Park. It was completed in August 2018. The building had 392 apartments, a childcare area, and a retail area. Upon opening, prices for flats ranged from $800,000 to $2.5 million. Quote, on 24 December 2018, residents had reported loud banging noises, exposed paneling, and cracks, which mainly affected levels 4 and 10. All residents were evacuated from the building and relocated to Airbnbs and hotel accommodations over the Christmas and New Year holiday period. The builders had to rush in massive jacks to prop up failed sections. The New South Wales government had allowed builders to self-regulate. Never heard that before. It appears they didn't do a very good job.
Yep.
In February 2019, it was noted that the government owned 43 or more of the units in Opal Tower. And in April 2019, 90 of the units had been reoccupied. Apartments in the building are pretty much unsellable, and it's tied up in a legal mess. Another apartment building in Sydney had to be evacuated about the same time, as drying soil caused the foundations to shift and the building to crack. More of that wonderful self-regulation. And recently, the company behind the disastrous Opal Tower building has been given a new contract to redevelop the historic North Sydney Pool, located next to the Sydney Harbour Bridge. Signed Robert in Oz and back in isolation, as the Delta variant has broken out here in Sydney.
Oh, geez.
Oh, and Ronan Point was in the UK, Robert notes. So, Jesus.
Wow, that's just mind-blowing. Oh, my God. And think about all those kind of fights. In New York City.
Yeah. Oh, there's one that's really, really tall. There's one that's really, really tall and skinny in Midtown, and just looking at it gave me the creeps. It's like that thing looks like it could be blown over in a high wind.
So is this something covered by the Army Corps of Engineers? Or, like they have the NTS. I don't know. Who is that asshole that's driving the car like that? NTS, whatever it is when there's airplane crashes.
Oh, the NTSB, the National Transportation Safety Board?
Yeah. So do they have a similar body that goes in and investigates huge collapses like this? They must.
I don't know. I mean, it wouldn't be within the purview of the Army Corps. And frankly, we can be glad about that, because the Army Corps of Engineers could fuck up a one-car parade.
Well, and then, you know, and then of course, what if there is something that exists to investigate such things? Trump has probably hollowed that agency out.
Well, you're right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, or it's got a bunch of filthy cronies in it.
Exactly, and so, you know, this needs to be investigated, and he's right. They need to be looking at the surrounding buildings. All of these buildings need to be looked at. You know, I mean, this is frightening. Anyone that's living in a similar style apartment building complex like that must be freaking out, wondering, could this happen to me? You know, and this is my fear, is that, you know, with infrastructure, the things are going to start collapsing. Like, all of, you know, things are going to, like, we're going to be seeing this, like, in rapid succession. The things have been so neglected. We're going to be seeing this in rapid succession. And this watered-down bill that they did today, that they agreed to, which it still has to go through more hurdles with the Senate, the House and the Senate. It may not be something that, you know, I fear it's not going to be enough. It's not going to be enough, and it's clearly already too late. And I would like, you know, they can use things like this and, you know, to say we need to do more. I quite frankly hope this agreement crashes and burns and that Biden, you know, grows a pair for this and says we're pushing for the bigger package. And just fucking
well, I think it will crash and burn. Musco Mitch is not going to let anything happen. The only way anything happens is if Manchin and Sinema grow up and recognize that they're going to have to find a way to carve out things like voting rights and they're going to have to use reconciliation on the infrastructure bill. But I don't know if either one of them have the maturity to do that.
Well, I think Nancy said something that I didn't understand quite what she said today at her press conference, where she said, you know, we're going to open up a committee or something to investigate January 6th. But she said something that we're not going to do an infrastructure package unless it's bipartisan. I thought something about reconciliation. I didn't quite understand what she was getting at, but she wants it to be bipartisan. And this is what we need to get after these people about the filibuster. A filibuster is causing a tremendous amount of damage. And anyway, that, you know, the infrastructure needs to be done, needs to be big. Like, I'm thinking something in between what Biden originally proposed and what Bernie is saying, $6 trillion.
Yeah.
Because probably Bernie is on the mark.
I think what Bernie's talking about is sort of a de minimis. This is not a wish list. But, Darlene, I got to get out of here.
Okay, goodbye. Yeah,
all right,
thank you.
You have a good night. We'll talk soon. Tell me I enjoyed hearing from her.
Oh, yeah, she's sitting here all quiet now.
You have a good night.
All right.
Bye now. What a wonderful conversation with Darlene in Connecticut. Thanks, everybody, for joining in the conversation. Thanks for participating in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to everybody who jumped in a la carte this evening to help get the fundraising goal down to, you know, only $485. And again, thanks so much to Mark, and thanks so much to Will in Chicago following up on that. And thanks to everyone who jumped in. And thanks for meeting Paul from Parts Unknown, Summer of Robin Challenge. That just still tickles me. That's lovely. Thanks to all of our subscribers, Patreon and PayPal. It means so much what you do to help keep the program on the air, along with the a la carte contributors. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room. And thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Brand new Fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia.
And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. Get your vaccine if you haven't already. Encourage others who are not vaccinated to please get vaccinated. Let's try to get to that 70% level. It's so important for our country. Pay close attention to what Paul said earlier this evening. Remember, the vaccine is your last line of defense, not your first. So keep washing your hands. Keep not touching your face. Keep carrying your hand sanitizer around. Keep some gloves on hand. Wear masks when you're not sure that everybody you're around has been vaccinated. And, you know, if somebody comes towards you babbling and hooting about how we're spending too much on the infrastructure, we need more buildings to collapse, avoid that person like the plague, because they are. Later.